say this, by pointing at people during the run-up to the election, that they shouldn't.
Head on with Boss Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Boss Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You'll forgive me if I'm just a little bit paranoid. Is this going to stay on? Anything going to beep? Anything going to blink? Is the power going to go out? Come on, if you're going to do it now. I don't want this happening. I don't want this happening halfway through the program or 20 minutes in or something like that. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, look. Fact of the matter is, with the way things have been, we'll probably make it through these 3 hours, but we will do so with me waiting for the other shoe to drop. Makes me a little bit crazy when I get a show going and then, you know, sorry, Bob, no. That was frustrating last night. That was extremely frustrating last night. We've had some frustrating evenings lately. Between computers getting screwed up and, look, I should not gripe. I really, really should not gripe. At some point earlier today, I read that there are 100,000 of my fellow West Virginians for whom coal is still not keeping the lights on. Yeah, really. There are people in this state who are still in shelters, who can't heat their homes, who can't cook, don't have access to water because, you know, that maybe they've got a well and the well is on, the well has a pump in it and the pump's got, it depends on electricity and... Yeah, you get the idea. But we've got electricity for now. Cross your fingers. Knock wood. See, I'm wrapping myself in the noggin right now as we speak. We'll get through it. And I really do want us to get through it tonight for a couple of reasons. We simply must, if no one else does, mark the anniversary of the Kingston Ash Dam disaster in eastern Tennessee a year ago. And another little something else that came to my attention, and that is this. It is now officially 13 years that we have been without Carl Sagan. And in the course of not being able to do a show or anything like that, I had some old discs and just watched Cosmos last night in the on the laptop with what was, you know, with the battery that was there. Yeah, I got an hour or so. I got an episode in or whatever. And it was it just reminded me of how much there are people out there that we need, that we would be so much better off for having in this fight right now. Carl Sagan was born in 1934. He would have been 75 years old as of November 9th of this year had he survived. And we sure could use him in the fight against the booger eaters, where global warming is concerned. Because he so gently and you know, not in your face, not confrontationally, took fundamentalism apart piece by piece by piece in that Cosmos series. And it would be awfully nice if we had him around now as we try to make, as we try to drag, about 40% of America kicking and screaming into the 13th century. That's kind of where they are. I have a tremendous amount of respect for people like Carl Sagan. You know, one of his, one of the things that Carl Sagan was most concerned about was the possibility of the United States and the USSR basically incinerating the planet through some form of nuclear weapons proliferation-inspired madness, or induced, not inspired, but induced madness. Now that that threat is somewhat reduced, do we have any doubt that Carl Sagan would be active, would have very important things to say about what we are doing to this, what this, and he coined the term, this pale blue dot upon which we live? Is there any doubt? Not for me. Not for me. I miss Hunter Thompson. I miss Kurt Vonnegut. And I miss Carl Sagan. And, you know, a lot of people had a lot of fun with Dr. Sagan because of his distinctive speaking style, billions and billions. Although in Cosmos, he never actually said that. A lot of people had a lot of fun with him, but then there were people who were just horses' rear ends toward him. And those people earn a special place in, you know, what? Yeah. I don't know, a spit in hell or something. Back in 1994, Apple Computer began developing the Power Macintosh 7100, and their internal code name for it was Carl Sagan, because Apple's internal people had determined that the Power Macintosh 7100 would make them billions and billions of dollars. Well, it got out that they had done that, and Sagan sued. He lost. So then they turned, renamed the project BHA for Butthead Astronomer. Sagan sued and lost. Really, though, why would you show evince such contempt for a brilliant man like Carl Sagan? But they did. But he passed away. He was 62 years old. When he passed away on December the 20th, 1996. I remember it well because I read the story in the Birmingham News, because we were on our own little death watch down in Birmingham, Alabama, my father and I, sitting hour after hour after hour in the waiting room of the University of Alabama, Birmingham Medical Center, a place that I would not take a stray dog to be worked on, by the way. With my mom having been butchered a few floors up. And it was there that I read the news of Carl Sagan's passing. We certainly could... We could use the skills and the talents and the massive brain of Carl Sagan right now. No doubt about that whatsoever. And I don't know if you've heard this. This is something called A Glorious Dawn. Just a little tribute to Sagan. Everybody, if you've listened to John Fox, you know the disdain that many of us hold for something called auto-tune. If you ever hear a modern pop singer allegedly singing, and you hear this sort of machine-y quality in their voice, you'll know that they probably couldn't carry a tune in a bucket, and that their voices are being computer-corrected on the fly by this thing called auto-tune. Well, auto-tune was, in this case, used to make Carl Sagan a vocalist. And you just you kind of have to listen to this. This is just magnificent. Well worth your time. Little tribute to Carl Sagan.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
First, invent the universe. Space was filled with a network of wormholes. You might emerge somewhere else in space. Some went out in time.
The sky calls to us. We do not destroy ourselves. We will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits. Not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The horizon of the Milky Way. Cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships of the awesome machinery of nature.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, which we float like a mote of dust.
The
morning
sky. But the brain does much more than just recollect. It compares, synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
The simplest thought, like the concept of the number one, has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language for testing the structure and consistency of the world. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, the rising of the Milky Way.
The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars.
Thousands of years, people have wondered about the universe. Did it stretch out forever, or was there a limit? From the Big Bang to black holes, from dark matter to a possible Big Crunch, our image of the universe today is full of strange-sounding ideas.
How lucky we are to live in this time, the first moment in human history when we are, in fact, visiting other worlds.
A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rise. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
Shore of the cosmic ocean. Recently we've waded a little way up, and the water seems inviting.
Wow. You know, I'm sorry. This is the disclaimer. I was born in 1963. I'm a child of the space generation. And the absolutely unquenchable hopefulness of Carl Sagan was magic to me as a young man growing up. In mentioning those who are gone and are much missed, Marty reminds me, don't leave out George Carlin. Yeah, indeed. But that's the thing. the fact of the matter is there's a lot wrong right now, and we haven't found, or I suppose we're still waiting to find, those voices who can give life to exactly what it is that's wrong. And maybe that's part of our malaise. Our buddy Matt Osborne over at OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com, has posted an essay asking where do we go from here? How do we deal with those things that we don't like in the health care bill? And how do we build the momentum to shut up the baggers and booger eaters out there? And it's all part of a piece, really, I think, if you take a long, hard look at it. Because what we miss in the absence of people like Carl Sagan or Kurt Vonnegut or Hunter Thompson or George Carlin are people who said profoundly and credibly what a bunch of asses it is that we are dealing with on the other side. On the other hand, there are people out there who are saying, who are saying the important stuff. I spent the weekend, I was kindly provided a copy by our good friend Cindy in the Great Northwest. I was provided a copy of a book by Michael Parenti called The Assassination of Julius Caesar that has been mentioned on more than one occasion on this program. I sat down with it and devoured it in about 3 hours. If something appeals to me, I just rip right through it. And for those of you who are interested in that sort of thing, I highly recommend this book. Get it, borrow it from the library, whatever you have to do, because it is quite frankly one of the most interesting theses on a world-changing event. The whole planet changed because of the assassination of Julius Caesar, quite frankly. And it's hard not to recognize that. And the whys and the wherefores of his assassination, Michael Parenti, having read the book, I agree with him wholeheartedly. The reasons for the assassination have been put forward largely from a perspective of the conservative class and those who would justify the assassination. So I think we'll probably be talking about this a little bit more in the future. Again, have the library order it for you. Buy it for yourself if you can. I'm not sure what it goes for. I'm incredibly grateful to have had it provided to me. The Assassination of Julius Caesar by Michael Parenti. And basically what he argues is that, as is often the case throughout history, Julius Caesar was assassinated not because he was trying to make himself the king of Rome, as has been alleged, but because of the reforms that he tried to put through that would have benefited the working class in Rome. And he draws a line from Julius Caesar working backward to people like Publius Claudius and the two brothers Gracchi, that is almost, it's almost undeniable when you look at it through his lens. Now, as far as real news is concerned, quick email-wise. On the Carl Sagan piece, hearing from Jude, thank you for playing this, crying at the joy of the unimaginable. Thanks, Jude. No, there's real news out there. There's real news. I don't think you can anymore not commemorate the Kingston Ash Dam break than you can not commemorate an anniversary of Katrina. Granted, in the Kingston Ash Dam collapse, there was no loss of life. But it's not for it. That's not as a result of the Tennessee Valley Authority having done anything that particularly mitigated that. It was just that time of year. No one was at their lake homes when those what it wind up being 1.8 billion gallons of incredibly concentrated toxic waste that spilled into the Clinch River and the Emory River and on down to the Tennessee. I think eight rivers have been touched now by all of that vile poison. And the aftermath, we're still waiting. You know, the EPA said that it was going to regulate coal fly ash, and then a couple of days later they said, we're coming out with it. And they're coming, it may be next month. Because, of course, some level of industry pressure was being brought to bear. We know that some of that toxic waste has been dumped on a community in Alabama, Perry County, Alabama, subject to incredible environmental injustice. And now we're finding out where fly ash is concerned. Sit down for this one, would you? An Associated Press story by Rick Callahan, datelined Indianapolis. And like I said, sit down, strap in. The federal government is encouraging farmers to spread a chalky waste from coal-fired power plants on their fields to loosen fertilized soil, even as it considers regulating coal wastes for the first time. The material is produced by power plant scrubbers that remove acid rain causing sulfur dioxide from plant emissions. A synthetic form of the mineral gypsum, it also contains mercury, arsenic, lead, and other heavy metals. Well, gosh, that's just got to be great for your farmland, doesn't it? And here's the punchline. The U.S. EPA says that those toxic metals occur only in tiny amounts that pose no threat to crops, surface water, or humans. And then this is a little bit of bad journalism, but some environmentalists say too little is known about how the material affects crops and ultimately human health for the government to suggest that farmers use it on their land. It is toxic waste. It's also radioactive. Bob, it is just a little bit radioactive. Jeff Ruck, R-U-C-H, Jeff Smith, no, I'm kidding. Jeff Ruck, Rush, Executive Director, why can't I have a pronouncer with these things? Executive Director of Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility said, basically, this is a leap into the unknown. This stuff has materials in it that we're trying to prevent entering the environment from coal-fired power plants, and then to turn around and smear it across agricultural lands raises some real questions. And, of course, we know now that there are a number of toxified McMansions around the country, especially in the southeast, where the wallboard inside the homes, you know, gypsum, drywall, you know what I'm talking about, comes from Chinese coal-fired power plants, that same synthetic gypsum, and it's making the houses unlivable and the people who live in the houses sick. With coal wastes piling up around the coal-fired plants that produce half the nation's power, the EPA and the U.S. Department of Agriculture began promoting what they call the waste's beneficial uses back during the Bush administration. Did I really have to add that? Back during the Bush administration. And according to Rick Callahan at AP, part of that push is to expand the use of synthetic gypsum, a whitish calcium-rue material known as flue gas desulfurization gypsum, or FGD gypsum. I'm thinking that some friends of mine, like Hurricane Creek Keeper in Alabama, John Wathen. You remember John. He was on the show a couple of times. I'm thinking he wouldn't think FGD gypsum stands for flue gas desulfurization. No. So we're still waiting for the proposals regulating coal-fired power plant fly ash. But in the meantime, well, Mr. God Almighty, this sounds like it does. It sounds like something from Green Acres. Oh, God, it's Haney again. Master Douglas, look here what I got for you to spread on your fields. That's right, I got you some flue gas desulfurized gypsum here. Just spread it right on there. Oh, you've got Master Douglas, the corn is going to love it. And then the fife and drum corps starts. The tiny corn plants with their little shoots putting up through the ground and then dying. because toxic waste has been spread on the field. And by the way, the EPA is being a little bit cagey. They're not saying whether any rulemaking that they do with regard to coal-fired power plant fly ash will touch on FGD gypsum. But we know how our government works, right? Somebody's been in that building. Well, I just wanted to let you know, I am from the American Flue Gas Desulfurized Gypsum Association, and I just wanted to let you know about the beneficial uses of flue gas desulfurized gypsum. Did you know that you can put it on your cornfields? That's right. Did you know you can feed it to your hogs? Did you know that it's a floor polish? No, it's not a floor polish. It's a dessert topping. Yeah, oh, flue gas desulfurized gypsum. Good for what ails you. Just a little bit. Is there anything flue gas desulfurized gypsum is not good for? If there is, we haven't found it. You know that guy exists. Because we're talking about Washington here, and anything that's worth a buck and a half is worth hiring a lobbyist to hustle the government over. And this is great because, you know, it's just laying around there. All you got to do is come up with the P.T. Barnum Bunko scheme to get, you know, consumers and so forth to pay for it. I mean, my God, is the price of your sack of potatoes going to go up? Now with flue gas desulfurized gypsum. In a statement released by the EPA, the EPA said, EPA believes that the use of FGD gypsum in agriculture is safe in appropriate soil and hydrogeologic conditions. Meanwhile, the Environmental Integrity Project isn't much worried. Eric Schaefer, who is the executive director of that organization, said that their research shows that there's such a tiny, tiny amount of heavy metals in that fly ash. But then he also added that federal limits on the amounts of heavy metals in FGD gypsum would help allay concerns. Well, that would give them assurance that they've got clean FGD gypsum. The farmers don't want to get a bad batch. Don't eat the brown acid! Don't want to get a bad batch. Oh, Mother McCree. I wish I was kidding. Yeah, because we're going to let the FGD gypsum industry regulate itself and oh dear. Why not add a little melamine just for flavoring? You know what I mean? Sure. Let's keep things rolling. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Susan.
Apparently these yahoos don't remember the plight of the bald eagle, which, being a carnivore, sat atop the food chain, and very, very tiny, tiny amounts of DDT would get into the plants, and then it would be eaten by grass eaters, and the grass eaters would get eaten by other carnivores and carrion eaters, and then eventually the eagles got to chewing on them.
Right, because a bald eagle will never attack anything its own size if it can attack something smaller instead.
Right.
That's what makes it such an appropriate symbol of our nation.
Yeah. Besides that, it's pretty. But by that time, DDT had caused the eggs in the bald eagle to be so
thin
that they were not hatching, and the bird almost went extinct because, being at the top of the food chain, nasty things get concentrated. Duh. Oh, my God.
Well, exactly, and that's the thing. Well, you know, there's just a little bit. There's just a little bit. There's just a little bit of arsenic, just a little bit of cadmium, just a little bit of selenium, just a little. But by the time that, if there's just a little bit of it, by the time that you've dumped 50 or 60 or 100 tons on top of Farmer Brown's soybean crop, what's that going to say for the soybeans?
Now, some of which is going to go into the main food supply, some of which is going to be fed to cattle and get into the food chain that way. And it's going to be concentrated and then reconcentrated and then reconcentrated. And eventually it's going to hit us. Woohoo!
Yeah, sooner rather than later, most likely.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, in case anybody wants links to, there's an article and a photograph about the Asheville on today's show post. There's also a link for, Dr. Sagan's, bio in Wikipedia. In the same post, and by the way, the thing that I remember most about Dr. Sagan, and it was billions upon billions, not billions and billions.
Right, that's the phrase he used. That's as close as he came in Cosmos, right?
Yeah, and what he was doing was, when I heard it, the thing I remember most about it, not only this childlike wonder he had, but it was an explanation. Somebody asked him once, do you think that there is a possibility of intelligent life elsewhere in the universe? So he goes into this long explanation about all the billions upon billions of planets in this galaxy and all the billions upon billions upon billions of galaxies in this, you know, and so on and so forth. And he says, if even one half of 1%, you know, clustered,
yeah,
had the right conditions, we would be the most arrogant people in the universe to believe that we were alone.
Right. Right.
And he's just, he had this childlike wonder that I adored it. And being somewhat older than you are, I remember all of it, the whole space exploration. And he was there for all of it. And he was just so...
Oh, he was a consultant for NASA almost from day one of NASA's existence.
Yeah. And he made it so easy to understand. He was just wonderful. I just loved him.
Well, you know, I thought about him... Okay, I'm weird. I think like this. I thought about him the other day when the news, and, you know, it's just one of those little 15-second kickers at the end of a radio news broadcast, when I heard that scientists had announced that they had found a planet likely to have water on it that was a mere 40 light-years away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, why couldn't he just have gotten to hang around to see and hear this?
Yeah. Could you imagine the look on his face when, if he'd have been here in order to see that comet impact Jupiter?
Oh, sure.
I mean, oh man, that would be so cool. You know, that would be something that he would just delight in. And I just, you know.
Or the the announcement that there was ice, water, ice, on the moon.
On Mars.
No, on the moon.
And on Mars. Yeah, and on Mars.
It would have. But then again, hopefully there's somebody out there who can. But let me put this question to you, Susan. I have argued in the past that we have sort of passed certain. Milestones, if you will. Could Carl Sagan get something like Cosmos on television now at PBS?
I don't think so.
You know, it's kind of like saying, could All in the Family make it in TV now? You know, as edgy as it was. In its own way, Cosmos was edgy. Because it directly confronted the fundamentalists and their fundamentalist beliefs. You know, it didn't call them booger eaters like I do, but it was very Sagan made it very clear that he had very little patience for them.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why why he would never be able to get it on him.
Well, that's precisely my point. Because if something like Cosmos was to be broadcast now, the American family is so sure. Well, obviously, this man's spreading his evangelical atheist gender. And the government's paying for it.
Mm-hmm. If you want I'll let you go in just a minute. If you want a real glimpse of what this country could head for, get a book by Andre Norton called Ad Astra.
Okay. Yeah. He never could remember which.
She.
Okay. Brilliant science fiction author of the, late 60s, early 70s.
Actually, she started in the 40s, which is why she had to have the name Andre.
Right.
She couldn't get published otherwise.
Yeah, well, so many of them did started with the pulp magazines and, right.
But the society she depicts in that particular book is frightening. It's terrifying.
Well, and frankly, I think there's a connection, even though I didn't set out to make it. But there's a connection, Susan, between the anti-science mindset of this country as it is currently constituted. What we need is some clean coal. What we need to do is dump out their fly ash out on the cornfields. It'll be so good for it.
Right.
That anti-science mindset and the rise of fundamentalism in this country, they're not enough to constitute a majority, but they are enough to screw up everything we want to do. I'm reminded, for instance, the email came in with the subject line "Industry regulating itself," which I'd mentioned a few minutes ago in regard to the fly ash thing. Please remember that for 30 years, various industries spread spent transformer oil laced with PCBs to settle the dust on country roads, and that prior to doing so, the industry told the world, "It's safe, not to worry." PCBs, instant cancer, just add hot human.
Yeah. Another book to also scare the crud out of people. Robert A. Heinlein, Revolt in 2100.
Yeah, I read that one. I think I read just about everything he had by the time I was 16 or 18.
Oh, yeah, so did I. But the Ad Astra is, the parallels for that are just freaky. Scary.
And someone, I think, who was it that mentioned the new Margaret Atwood book the other night? I can't recall. But the woman who wrote The Handmaid's Tale, she's got another one out, and it's another bone chiller for anybody who values personal liberty. And these aren't just fantastic imaginings. They are nothing. They're nothing more than extrapolations of what ifs of people who currently exist and have control of significant chunks of popular will, people's minds. Yeah, if you get a chance, Susan, I have a feeling you'd get a charge out of reading Michael Peretti's The Assassination of Julius Caesar. It'd blow your mind.
I probably will.
Quite good.
Anyway, I shall let you go, and that picture on the posting, people, it'll blow your mind. It's an aerial view from the next day.
Yeah, that's along about the time that John Wathen was up there documenting the Ashbergs. I think, come to think of it, somebody remind me toward the end of the show. What I will do is I will run, I'll run a couple of different shows, not just tonight's show, in the rerun stream. And you'll be able to hear John Wathen, talk about what he's observing in Kingston. I've got a note out to John. He may be too busy this evening, but I Facebooked him a note, asking him if he might have time to come on and talk about it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
This evening, but he was, I remember, John was just incensed at what he was seeing and at the administrative and bureaucratic stonewalling that was taking place.
Yeah. That would be cool. But
cool.
If I don't get to say it beforehand, before the 25th,
uh-huh.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and Donald.
Here.
And happy Saturnalia. The solstice was yesterday, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, see, that was another thing that kind of chapped my butt about being taken off the air. It was the solstice, and we had some solstice celebrating to do.
Ah, well.
But the sun,
when
but
power
you
goes
know,
out, the power goes out.
Right, true enough. But hallelujah, the sun has been reborn.
Yes.
So
it
yeah.
comes back.
Yeah, get out the frisbees and wheat checks. The year is a dawning.
Yep.
All right, Susan, you have a wonderful evening.
Okay.
Okay. Bye now.
Okay. Bye bye.
News Ninja Susan from Columbia City, Oregon. Go check out the post with that overhead shot of Kingston, Tennessee at headonradionetwork.com. I think, like she said, it'll be an ugly little eye opener. Now, see, I have no faith in any industry to regulate itself, whether it be the coal industry, the power industry, the oil industry, nothing. And that email was so absolutely true. Every major poisoning of the American people has been preceded by some paid industry flack saying, hey, this here's safe. That's safe. It's all right. You know what W.R. Grace and Company did in Massachusetts? Oh, that's a safe. We didn't cause that. Or PCB-laced transformer oil. Oh, this ain't going to be no problem. Even as I speak, down in parts of the South that are near these massive hog kill operations, Alabama among them, they take the toxin and antibiotic and fecal and all that vile nastiness out of their lagoons, and they take it over to one of the poorest counties in Alabama, Lawrence County, county seat Moulton, and they go to farmers and say, I tell you what, we're going to give it to you. I ain't even going to charge you. We're just going to spray this on your fields. Your soybeans are going to go absolutely crazy. And that may be true. The soybeans may love it. But my God, can you imagine? Because when you're dealing, and a lot of, you know, after the collapse of cotton and the boll weevil nastiness of the Deep South, soybeans were seen as a great replacement crop because where cotton will absolutely wear out the soil, soybeans reinvigorate it. But they also, they'll suck up what ails you. Whatever you put on there will wind up in your soybeans. So, and remember, when you see those little phrases like partially hydrogenated soy lecithin or whatever in all of your food, and I do mean all of it. Remember Richard calling in Friday night to tell me that there was high fructose corn syrup in Campbell's tomato soup? Yeah, like that. Well, the same thing with all these soy products. The soy, to begin with, is generally, what's planted in this country, is generally speaking, a genetically modified soy. Now, add to that that you're taking a genetically modified soy and you are then nourishing it with toxic waste. And then you're going to take some portion of that soy and you're going to process it and you're going to feed it to the humans. Pardon me if I don't get all excited about that. And pardon me equally as much if I get more than just a little bit disturbed, as you can well imagine why. So we've got that going for us. Other news, by the way, other news out of the state of Alabama. We have ourselves a new traitor to talk about. Freshman congressman from Alabama's 5th Congressional District, a radiologic oncologist named Parker Griffith, won a squeaker of an election as a Democrat. As of today, he's no longer a Democrat. He's a turncoat. He's a mugwump. He is, he's a piece of human garbage. Parker Griffith is now a Republican. I mean, he's the real deal. He is a re-pig licking. Yeah, Marty notes, by the way, spraying all that stuff, putting all that, yeah, it's a great way to protect the earth. Just kill ourselves off. Yeah, I know. So, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, how you doing?
Hey, Matt, what's up? Speak of the devil.
Well, I'm not the devil. I'm not even sure that I believe in his existence, but yeah, I was listening to your show opening and I thought I should call in, especially when you started talking about Griffith.
Yeah, you're one of his constituents. How's this sitting with you, Matt?
Well, he has never really sat all that well with me. Since his election, it has been one steady drumbeat of, suck, actually. He has never, to my knowledge, ever, voted for workers. He has consistently voted against environment. He has consistently voted against democratic initiatives, and, those include health care. And, he actually has, right now, a 7% progressive rating and a 33% conservative rating. So, yeah, that's...
What's the other 60%, jackass?
Let me see if I can pull up these statistics here for you. Let's see here. I did actually post on this earlier today. I attended the healthcare town hall we did in Florence back in August, where he was pandering to the teabaggers and talking about death panels and bashing immigrants and all kinds of delightful stuff you normally expect from, you know, the likes of, say, Joe Wilson. Yeah, that's Parker Griffith. The irony is that he had gotten so much bad will during his election, which was a squeaker, as you noted. He got so much bad will from the teabagging crowd in his district. He's got no chance of winning the Republican primary, I don't think.
Really?
Yeah. I think this is going to be one of the most colossal blunders you've ever seen. What you saw in New York 23 with Hoffman and Owens, that's exactly what you're going to see right here.
Are they going to go find him a teabagger then? More importantly, and I am not asking this question, Matt, as a smartass.
No.
Is there a single solitary liberal Democrat left in Northwest Alabama? Is there one?
If you mean one that will run for office,
that's,
I don't know.
That's what I mean. I mean, obviously you are. I know several there in Northwest Alabama.
Interestingly enough, I do not remember his name right now, but Griffith did have a primary opponent in 2008 who was a progressive. He was a physicist, actually.
Kind of hard to be a conservative physicist, isn't it?
Yes, it is kind of hard to be a scientist and a conservative anymore, which should tell you a lot. But Griffith is going to attempt to become the GOP establishment candidate. And what I don't think he realizes, and probably the D.C. Beltway folks don't realize, is that North Alabama, the Republican Party is very anti-establishment. The loudest voice of conservatism right now in North Alabama is a radio talk show host by the name of Dale Jackson, who I like to call the Rush Limbaugh of Huntsville, even though he's not a big fat guy. And Dale Jackson has been consistently opposed to Parker Griffith since the beginning of 2008. He has a banner on his website that calls Parker Griffith a liar. I mean, at every turn, there is another example of someone in this area who is going to be opposed to his candidacy as a Republican.
But don't you think some of that will turn now that he's changed the name? And I only say this because, among other things, and I think this is just funnier than heck, as quickly as Parker Griffith made his big change, the NRCC, National Repiglican Campaign Committee,
yeah,
or I don't know, National Repiglican Campaign Clavern, pulled an ad that was up on YouTube that called Parker Griffith a shameful doctor who was engaged in, and this is the quote from the NRCC, warehousing cancer patients in order to, and this is a quote again, make more profits.
Yes.
And that's gone down the memory hole.
All of their ads. They pulled several ads. They haven't pulled all of them by any means, but there were several ads up on YouTube that were left over from the campaign. Those had been all over the television. You couldn't watch anything but PBS without seeing them. It was a really tough, nasty, dirty campaign. It came down to the wire, and I don't think Griffith is going to win as a Republican. And the question, of course, that you're asking is whether there's actually someone to run as a Democrat, because that's a really good question.
I mean, is there a Democratic mayor anywhere in North Huntsville, Athens, Decatur, Florence, Sheffield, Tuscumbia, Muscle Shoals? A mayor,
that's the thing. I'm not really sure that there is one offhand that I could mention. We do have a very popular mayor in Huntsville, but he's very happy being mayor. The mayor of Florence, Bobby Irons, and you may know something about, he is in his 80s, late 80s, and he is having some domestic problems right now because the new management of the Times Daily, the local newspaper, is doing what previous management never did, which is to do actual investigative journalism about the city.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I haven't read it in a while. This is piquing my in my curiosity.
I will send you some links if you like, but what it comes down to is that the mayor has quite obviously lied about the grant applications that were put in by the Florence Fire Department, lied to the council, lied to the press, and has responded to the fiasco by attempting to close off access to City Hall from the press. So the editorial board at the Times Daily is now firmly in favor of transparency in government.
Uh-oh, they done started them a war with folks that buys ink by the barrel.
That's right. That's right. And you don't want to start a war with the ink. You know, that's why it's Osborne Ink. But, I don't know that there is going to be a Democratic challenger this time around. I hope so. I would like there to be one. I would absolutely be happy to do what I can to help one happen. But I do not see Griffith being able to overcome the fact that Republicans hate him passionately.
I don't know. You're there and you're seeing it up close, Matt, but I don't necessarily know that I agree, simply because, remember, it's the exact opposite of Bomber John McCain's campaign slogan. It ain't country first. It's party first.
That's right. I can understand where you're coming from, but what I'm saying is
there sure wasn't a backlash against Richard Shelby for going backstabber.
I think that there's going to be another New York 23. In Alabama 5, is what's going to happen.
Well, that I tell you what, that would make New York 23 look like chicken feed then, because watching that kind of meanness go down in Alabama, whoo! Oh,
nobody knows how to do mud better than us.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing that most folks may not really fully understand is that Alabama's 5th congressional district has gone Republican precisely twice.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1833.
That's correct.
And on one of those occasions was only because it was Reconstruction and they wouldn't let a Democrat run.
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, Alabama District 5 wanted to put Walter Mondale in office.
Yes.
It was the only district in Alabama that voted for Mondale. So, yeah, we're a heavily Democratic district. We have actual union representation here. We have the Arsenal, Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville, which creates
Marshall Space Flight Center, sure.
Thousands upon thousands of government jobs. And, you know, that's always something interesting to me. Someone who it may be based in Huntsville, like Griffith's opponent last year, Wayne Parker, was talking about the need to shrink government and so forth. And I'm like, how do you sell this to, you know, 30,000 people who work at the Marshall Space Flight Center and Redstone Arsenal whose jobs depend on government money. So.
Well, you know, the government's never created a single job.
Right, right. We all know about that. We all know about that. Government doesn't create jobs.
But I got to tell you, I mean, I've just been reading some comments here and there, and credit where credit is due. I first heard about this because our blogger, Texas Betsy, sent me the notice of the story from Left in Alabama.
Yeah.
And Left in Alabama is a great liberal blog down there. They do stunningly good work. And I just read it and went, well, I guess I'm not surprised because frankly, maybe the biggest indicator that we got was the struggle we had trying to get him to sign on to H.R. 1310,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Clean Water Protection Act. If you're a Democrat and you are downstream of mountaintop removal, and you're in a district that has a humongous amount of the Tennessee River flowing through it, you'd think that would be an easy call.
You would think that is an easy call, but it is apparently not an easy call for Mr. Parker Griffin. And I reiterate that when he was in this town hall in August, it was awful. I mean, I remember him immigrant bashing 3 or 4 times. I remember him bringing up the death panel business. He wouldn't debunk it when it was raised to him. I give him credit that he was attempting to try to at least explain to people that there was a crisis in American health care. You know, Alabama has 700,000 uninsured out of a population of about 4.2 million. So, yeah, we're talking about lots of people who need health care and don't get it. And more often than not, you know, that winds up hurting them in the long run. It makes them unhealthy. It kills some of them. We know about that. But at the same time, it was like he was throwing red meat left and right to try to keep the crowd on his side. He's cut from the George Wallace mold. That's the only conclusion I could come to watching him.
Okay. Ew.
My head still looked at. Yeah. Yeah, ooh. Ew.
Yeah, not ooh. Ew. You know, that's where you not only see the nasty thing, but you realize it's on the bottom of your shoe. Ew.
And you smell it. Ew.
Yeah. God, I love our I love our Southern English. But, you know, the other side of that, Matt, is the frustration I get when I see comments on, and of course, you know, you can comment from anywhere, but I saw a comment that says, Alabama and South Carolina, the only states in America where it's legal to lynch liberals, progressives, and Democrats. I guess that's the reason why I've always avoided the slave states like the plague. Well, daggum. Yeah, that's right. Take the last district in Alabama that consistently votes for Democrats and slur them real good.
Yeah, that'll work. That'll work every time.
Yeah, that's going to empower. Because, you know, people like you, Matt, you know, it's easy to be a liberal in a liberal community. It's a hell of a lot harder to be a liberal somewhere where liberal is a dirty word. I mean,
yes.
to be fair to that 5th District of Alabama, being Democratic down there is not what it's like to be Democratic in, say, you know, downtown Chicago.
Oh, heck no.
It's a whole nother thing because it's Democrats with guns,
mm-hmm.
lots of guns, and they go to church, and we grew up with these folks, and they'd have no sooner voted for a Republican than they would disavow their faith in Jesus.
That's correct.
But that's okay. We'll just call them slave staters.
As a matter of fact, I just pulled up a quote from Eric Erickson. This kind of illustrates my point. Eric Erickson, you, of course, know him. He's from redstate.com.
Right.
Yeah, he basically declared Griffin persona non grata, that we should now hope him. Yeah, that's really funny, Miss Stone. We should now help him be an extremely endangered Republican in a primary. We will not fix the GOP's problems if we keep allowing people who are not one of us to suddenly switch the letter next to their name and magically become one of us.
Oh, he's going. It sounds like Parker Griffith's going to have to go out and kill something.
Yeah, Parker Griffith is going to have a really hard time winning over the extreme right.
Oh, but you want to talk about slimy though, Jake Tapper.
Yeah.
Over at ABC News, he was tweeting earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
Tweeting, Jesus. He tweeted.
That's what we call it, we tweeters.
Yeah, I know. I know. I just yearn for the days of real journalism. Because I can't help but laugh at the reality of it when I see what Gary Trudeau is doing in terms of lampooning the entire journalistic establishment with Roland Headley and his tweeting campaign.
That's just brilliant.
Jake Tapper tweeted about the attack ad that called Parker Griffith, accused him of warehousing cancer patients.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Tapper tweeted, "The video was an NRCC attack ad against Griffith, which the GOPers removed with the speed of SNL removing its Brittany Murphy sketch." What happens to your brain when you become a member of the Johnny on the Spot Washington Press Corps?
Once you go past the Beltway, there is a secret device in the center of Washington that irradiates brain and brings them into line. It's like the village. It's like the village in the prisoner. That's what it is.
Yeah, I guess that's why perhaps. The folks over at Crooks and Liars refer to Inside the Beltway as the Villagers.
That's exactly why. That's exactly where it comes from. Now you know. The more you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You were talking about the planets earlier.
Yes.
I just wanted to pick up on this real quick.
Oh, do please.
This is inspiring. Are you aware of the work that's being done with plasma rockets right now?
Oh, no, but I really want to be.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll send you a link to this, too. Plasma rocket, you've probably heard of an ion engine. That's the basic idea, is that you are creating plasma, which burns a lot more slowly than, quote-unquote, traditional rocket fuel.
Okay.
You get much smaller thrust, but you get much more bang for the buck. Now, the thrust is not enough to even move a skateboard in gravity, but in microgravity, in the emptiness of space, this is enough to push a spaceship or a probe at a fairly rapid clip. You accelerate rather quickly, given the fact that you're doing it in a zero-g environment. Okay, so these plasma engines that they're working on, this is a joint program between private industry and NASA. And it's an international program, actually. There's one lab in Costa Rica that's working on solving problems with endurance of the rockets, and then there's a lab in Houston that is working on the power equation. And what you do is you put these plasma rockets atop a traditional rocket. You take your Atlas rocket with the chemical fuel that we're used to, and on top of that, in the payload, you put these engines with your payload. And once you have launched it into orbit, the computer points it at its target and proceeds to push with this plasma rocket. And you also are pushing in a gradually enlarging orbit around the Earth, using the Earth's gravity to slingshot you even faster. The transit time to Mars is cut down to 6 weeks when you do this.
Holy cow.
Yes, that is definitely a holy cow. When I blogged about this a couple of months ago, I actually got a kudos from a fellow blogger who called it an epic Civilization IV technology win. And really, that's what it is. This is how you get out to the outer planets and the solar system very fast. This is what makes it possible for humans to visit other worlds. So we're really talking about the cutting-edge technology of today in 10 years is going to be putting us where we dreamed of being. Kind of neat, huh?
Yeah, I offer it with the same caveat, Matt, if we can keep the booger eaters from ruining it for us.
Well, yes, of course, because the booger eaters would rather that, well, I'm sure that they're fine with weapons in space. The Lord knows Rumsfeld was. In fact, that's probably the moment when I knew that Rumsfeld was not a nice guy, but the moment that I can remember just thinking, okay, that's it. I've lost any last remaining shred of credibility for these guys is in 2002, I learned that Rumsfeld was talking about weaponizing space. You have to be insane. That was my instant reaction. You have to be insane to weaponize space. Oh, well, it's the high ground. No, it's not the high ground. Now, once you put weapons in space, now you've just taken the same problem that threatens human life on Earth, and you've extended it out there into orbit. And I'll tell you, you know, you and I remember what it's like to have 40,000 nuclear weapons aimed at it.
That's true.
And that's what killed me after 9/11. It was as if the whole country completely forgot that there had been a Cold War, that we were 30 minutes from complete annihilation of the human race.
God, if only...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, if only the Russians had been Muslim or something.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's... It still kills me to this day, the fact that we lived through that, that we made it through that, and somehow, yeah, you know, 9/11 was awful. I'm not going to say it was...
That's not what you're saying.
No, but at the same time, it's like 9/11 was nothing compared to what waited for us at the push of a button all of our young lives.
Yeah, and something, you know? Something that easily could have eliminated the planet before you and I were born in the form of the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, sure. And it was not...
But we're going to lock down and live in absolute pants-wetting fear over a 6-foot-7-inch Arab with a portable dialysis machine living in a cave.
Exactly. That's my point.
By the way, watching our drone video feeds, but, you know...
yeah, that's pretty crazy. I saw that item, and it kind of blows my mind because I worked with so much encryption when I was in the armed forces. I still am wondering how in the world they have unencrypted feeds coming out of those Predator drones.
Well, they tried it with encryption, man.
Right.
But since 9 dozen people, because of the nature of our military bureaucracy, had to be able to view the feed at the same time, and sort of, I don't know, backseat drone drive over the shoulder of video game operator Sergeant Third Class Roger Ramjet, then the encryption slowed it to the point that it was no longer real time. So rather than, you know, and it's that whole old thing about, you know, we spent $1 million developing a pen that would write upside down in zero gravity, but the Soviets sent a pencil into space.
Right, exactly.
Well, rather than looking at the bureaucratic structure and saying, you know, really, honest to God, does Donald Rumsfeld really have to see this? Do we really have to have a direct feed of this straight into the White House so George Bush can Game Boy with it? Rather than doing that and cutting back the number of backseat droners, we just eliminated the encryption, thinking that those stupid Arabs will never have computers.
Right, which is the same
thing. I mean, it's not like our code's written in Arabic or anything they could understand.
You know, actually, what they do, and I've never seen this, but I've had it explained to me by people who've seen it, they have the feed going out to multiple centers. And if you were to go to Langley, you would see, operators. It'd be sort of like a mission control room. You have these people watching the feed, and apparently on the screen, you have what amounts to a chat room. So you've got the guy in D.C., and you've got the guy in Pakistan, and you've got the guy in who knows where, and they're all chatting about what they're seeing because they're trying to come to a consensus about what it is that they're seeing. Okay, that looks like something. What is that? Is that a wedding party, or are those actual known terrorists? Okay, that guy looks familiar to me. I'm going to take a freeze frame of this, and I'm going to, you know, compare it and see if it's this guy. That's what they're trying to do. But the problem is that, once again, you have so many people wanting to take part in that, that you have completely divorced the platform in the sky over Afghanistan from the very necessary part of the human equation, which is the eyes on the ground. We talk about boots on the ground all the time, and you just can't replace it with technology. And we have learned that to our cost. We have learned that to our cost.
But I didn't see, the thing is, though, Matt, I didn't see anything in the story that said, well, we're going to encrypt this right away. What I saw instead was a Pentagon spokesman saying, well, you know, we've known about this for a while, but it's not. Yeah, and it's all just Buck Turgidson in there in the with the big board in Doctor Strange. Ah, well, you know, we've known about this for a while, but they didn't see anything. That they didn't see the big board. which is when it's coming from a Pentagon type, that is an absolute lead pipe cinch guarantee that, yeah, it has done us significant damage.
I would say the chances are remote that it has not done us significant damage. I would say those chances are remote. Now, granted, it's not always easy to intercept a signal, but, you know, it really kills me. We have two ways of protecting a signal. And you're talking to the right guy now, by the way, because this is what I used to deal with in the Army. I worked both sides of this battle. You have frequency hopping, which is where you change frequencies every once in a while. You can do that up to 100 times a second. Or you can encrypt. Or you can both, actually. And it's like...
Or you can just assume that the Arabs can't speak English and everything will be fine.
Or you can just do that. Right, exactly. That's what you can assume. And that's apparently what they've assumed. Instead of changing the radios out, which would be, I guess, a fairly simple process because the radios already exist and they're mass-produced, I have a friend who works at the plant that makes them and pushes the parts in with his thumb. And instead of doing that, what we've got is what we've been talking about, which is just a big mess.
Well, Mildred just wrote in to say, oh, those Pentagon smart guys, don't they know that Best Buy ships?
Oh, but see, you can't go to Best Buy and get this. Oh, no, actually, the little crystal that allows you to do frequency hopping is about $1,000 because it's only manufactured in the United States for one use, which is the U.S. military. And, of course, nobody else can have this crystal. It's illegal to have this little crystal in any other radio manufactured in the United States. And
the software itself that allows you to follow the unencrypted stuff has been available on the Internet just for a slightly shorter time than the first porn.
Exactly.
For $29.95. And I'm sure there's a PayPal button and, you know.
I'm sure there is. It's actually quite stunning when you consider the amount of stuff that's available to you. It's, for example, the computer program that the FBI uses to take its intelligence about mafia organizations and to build three-dimensional models of the organization was pulled off the shelf and used to find Saddam Hussein. It's from a company called I2. That's the letter I and the number 2. And that software has been available to any college student who wants it for about 10 years. All you have to do is ask for it. You get a free copy.
Oh, jeez. Well, I have to give you one last giggle before we go, Matt.
Okay, good.
Because this is like a kicker or something. There's a new announcement out from the George W. Bush comic book compendium, otherwise known as the Bush Presidential Center. down there on the campus of SMU, where the SMU Alumni Endowment Fund lost millions of dollars when they decided to put the comic book collection there on the SMU campus.
Yes.
There's a new announcement out. that the Bush Center is going to house a think tank, Matt.
Now, a think tank.
Yeah, that's not the part where you pee yourself laughing, although that's pretty fun all by itself. No. The Bush Center is going to house a think tank that's going to be called the George W. Bush Institute. Okay. And the George W. Bush Institute's going to promote ideas. You got to say it that way, ideas.
You have to. Yeah. Mandatory.
Centered around the principles of freedom, opportunity, responsibility, and compassion. And here's the fun part. They're going to have a TV show.
They're going to have a TV show.
Yes, sir, a TV show. It's going to be called Ideas in Action.
Ideas in Action.
Ideas in Action. Or, I don't know, Deers in the Headlights. No, Ideas in Action, and this is the press release. The George W. Bush Institute, the action-oriented think tank that... This is going to be tough, Matt. The George W. Bush Institute, the action-oriented think tank that is part of Bush's presidential center, will co-produce a public television show hosted by its executive director, Ambassador James Glassman. Ideas in Action will premiere in February and will be co-produced by Andrew Walworth, who produces PBS's Think Tank. They are about to take over PBS, too, Matt.
The Think Tank, there's a show about a think tank? Is that like a reality show?
I don't know,
but I think I would like to watch a reality show about a think tank because I think that would be pretty revealing if it was actually a reality show and not... prearranged piece of garbage. But anyway.
What's funny coming out of this is that this news comes on the heels of the American people speaking, so to speak, in an NBC Wall Street Journal poll that finds that the Bush era, 2001 to 2009, a combined 58% of Americans say the decade was either awful or not so good.
I saw that. Yes, that's absolutely spot on.
Here's one of our ideas in action. We're going to stop letting the NBC and the Wall Street Journal have polls that say I suck.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing to me how the Bush and Schadenfreude has disappeared. It's like, we don't want to hate Bush anymore. This is what really gets me. We don't want to hate Bush anymore. We don't even want to think about him. We just want him to go away.
Right. Just yeah, put
crawl in a hole and go away.
Put your footy pajamas on. You can go to bed at 8 o'clock every night now if you want to, George. And you can have a lifetime supply of super info lithium batteries. And you can play Game Boy till hell freezes over. Just don't let us see your ugly mug.
Exactly. Just don't go away, man. Just go away. Oh, it's been real fun, but I have to go cook dinner now.
Well, do that and take care of yourself. That sounds like a mean little coffee you got going for you.
It's just a little coffee because I haven't had anything to drink in the last 10 minutes. But I will call back again soon.
Oh, do please, and see if you can't get some sort of a rabble roused or a ruckus uprucked or whatever you do to get a ruckus going about Parker Griffith. I think that'd be just fine. Or maybe do that ancient Greek thing and ask if there is one decent liberal left in the 5th congressional district who might run for office.
There you go. One decent liberal. That's all I need. I'm going to title a blog post "One Decent Liberal."
I feel like I've accomplished something.
Matt,
take care, brother.
You have a great night.
All right, bye now.
Bye bye.
The host and writer behind OsborneInc.com, OsborneInc.com, Matt Osborne, of Florence, Alabama, by the way. I hope I'm not blowing his cover. Also posts over at HuffingtonPost.com. I had a feeling he wouldn't take this Parker Griffith news any too well. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy holidays, Bob, from Brian, New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
And my little blind diabetic doggy buddy there, Casper.
Oh, I didn't know Casper was blind. Bless his little heart.
He's an American Eskimo dog. He's going to be 12 on New Year's Day. He was born on January 1st, 1998. He was 2 on Y2K Day. But he's been good luck for me. He's watched out for me for years, and I'm watching out for him. But I wanted to call about your great call you just had on there with Matt. I'm going to look up his website. And again, it's something, the truth is what matters. Or the progressives will never take back this country. The truth has to get out there. The corporations are in the way of that right now. But the truth has to matter. It has to take, it has to be truth over uberales, to kind of take paraphrase the demonic Nazi slogan of World War II. The truth has to take over all else. I've heard that, what he was talking about before, Matt, what he just talked about during the Cold War, in the September 11th, the post 9/11 America, where we still are under the illusion that we think we're the sole remaining superpower. But the fact is that those 20,000, there's at least 20,000 Russian warheads, I believe, are still pointed at us. For one thing, at nuclear.
That's true.
I believe they still are. Basically, their arsenal is still aimed at us. And some of those that were aimed at China have been aimed at toward us, especially, and they have not, they've thought about, toning down after George W. Bush left office, but after Barack Obama has stood up for NATO and the missile defense, so-called defense in Poland and Czechoslovakia, et cetera, the Russians are not, taking so kindly to that. And it's a long way. He's right about that, though, Matt, and yourself, or the October 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, and John F. Kennedy himself, and he was touring the country around Montana and the great Northwest area there, and the northern Plain State there, where there were a lot of Berkshires out there. John Birch Society was powerful in, and he was talking about a September 1962 period, about why he wanted a test ban treaty, why he wanted to tone down the Cold War, because he and Mr. Khrushchev, both veterans, bloodied veterans of World War II, they had stared into the abyss of the end of life on this earth in the Cuban Missile Crisis of October 1962. And in that speech, John F. Kennedy spoke about, being involved in a war with the then Soviet Union, that it still basically has retained basically all of its nuclear power now, that it's called, even though it's called Russia now. But he's talking about that in the short course of a day, if it went to nuclear exchange, that kind of war, 300 million people would die in the short course of a day. And then he went on to say, a paraphrase here, that's why he supported the test ban treaty. And I've heard, John F. Kennedy was an idealist and a progressive, I believe he was. Over time, he would have shown that. He would have, Matt was talking about the space program, and John F. Kennedy wanted to put a man on the moon before the end of the 60s, and thank God, God love him, they did do that. It was under a different president, named President Nixon, when they actually landed there, July 1969, I believe it was. But the people today, they try to, what they insult liberals and progressives, and there are many, they try to say that they can't trust us, because they try to make out Barack Obama to be a liberal, and he is not. He's a corporatist in the larger sense of the word. He's been bought out, and I believe he's learned, unfortunately, from what has happened to the four assassinated men in the 1960s, especially the two Kennedy brothers. The last true progressive running for president, I believe, was murdered June 4th and June 5th, 1968, Bobby Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, in the hotel. There were CIA agents there, as well as Sirhan Sirhan, who could not have fired the actual shots that killed him. He could have been part of it. He could have been brainwashed as well. They've come up with things like that about Lee Harvey Oswald as well. I believe that Lee Harvey Oswald and John F. Kennedy, God love them both, are together as brothers in heaven. I truly believe that. And the truth will set us free eventually. But the truth...
Yeah, it's that eventually part that busts my butt, though, Brian.
Yeah, it may have to be in the afterlife. But at the same time, Bob, it is the holidays, too, so I'll just leave it at... The people that are cynics are out there, that it's the cynicism that's taken over this country ever since 1980, the election stolen by the October surprise secret operation, And then the coronation of in January 1981 of Ronald Reagan. Ever since then, there was something incredibly dark and short-sighted and cynical, ever more cynical, is set in this country. And the cynics out there, they want to go after people like myself or yourself or anyone, regardless of your opinion about who killed John F. Kennedy, who killed Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, what really happened on September 11th that somehow allowed for hours attacks there, and how no science on earth can back up that the jets alone could have brought those two twin steel towers down, the first time in history, and the World Trade Center 7 was not hit by any plane. That steel tower, too, went down. Only three steel buildings in the entire history of steel, which is an incredibly, incredibly nearly indestructible substance. It could have been taken down by military explosions, by controlled demolition. But the fact is, they try to say that, well, you're never going to find out the truth in this life, son. It's like, you know, we may have to wait till the afterlife, but at the same time, they did eventually find out about who killed, what the plot was that killed, God love him, Abraham Lincoln. They did find out, you know, imagine if he had...
Oh, yeah, but well, let me enlarge there somewhere I think you're going, Brian.
Okay.
And I know that you are a voracious reader of books.
Yes.
I mentioned this book at the beginning of the program. It's been out since 2003, Michael Parenti's The Assassination of Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
Get your hands on this, Brian.
I know.
Because what I think you'll find out is that what you're describing is not a process that is unique to the United States of America. It is rather a process of how the haves treat the have-nots down through history.
Right. Absolutely, absolutely. And this kind of feudalism, elitism, or fascism is the latest term that best describes it from 20th century human history onwards. This has always been a part of the dark side of humanity. But I believe that the truth is, you know, the people that try to say, you know, for all the little kids out there, I have little great nephews and nieces out there that I want them to believe as long as they can in Santa Claus, or Santa Claus is one word they use for him. As long as they can, you know, they try to dismiss us as saying that, well, if you're going to want the truth in this life, you might as well believe in Santa Claus, or you might as well believe in, you know, whatever, name some fairies and whatever. But I believe that the truth, you know, if that's what it takes, then I believe that, you know, the goodness of Santa Claus is this goodness of the Prince of Peace, Nate, that's what Christmas is about, that's what Santa Claus is about, a child born on that day is the Prince of Peace named Jesus Christ. There were other people there, the Buddha of human history, that Prince Gautama. He was somebody who gave up all his, talk about a rich family, a rich feudalistic Hindu family, and this Buddha of human history, he gave it all up and became a beggar for the rest of his life, basically lived and preached much like Jesus did before they murdered him by conspiracy.
Gandhi, Dr. King, yep. And again, out of this book by Parenti, the Gracchus brothers.
But again, I'm not going to give up on the truth. And that means that for this, what this coming up this day that's supposed to celebrate peace, the December 25th, whatever the historical meaning of it is, whatever the findings are, the fact is, I'm still going to, for all the kids out there, I believe the truth will come out eventually, inexorably, for all of us. And that means in this, for all, God love for, you know, the children out there, I still believe in Santa Claus. And this is a stupid song from Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, but I'll just play it real quickly, then I'll get out of your way, Bob. Here it is. It's just a hooray for Santa Claus, kids, and hooray for the truth of America.
Hear, hear. Thanks. Santa Claus Conquers the Martians?
That's some... I'm stumped. I didn't know there was such an animal as Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Wow. Thanks, Brian. I have, Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. Old guy gets around, doesn't he? Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm sorry,
Sandra?
Wow. Yes.
Did you hear what I just heard?
Yes. Oh, what's happening? Listen.
I mean, I was on the air hollering, don't eat the brown acid a little bit earlier, but...
What the... I'm sorry.
I thought I just thought I was sitting here sipping on some blueberry pomegranate juice, but all of a sudden the walls are breathing and, you know, the sky's getting a little paisley on me.
That caller always is a bit of a treat, and I'm like, okay. And then I didn't know what was happening. I'm sorry. That was... Wow. I guess that was my holiday treat. Good night.
Sandra, this is going to take a minute.
It is.
All of a sudden, I'm not a well man.
I was like, I didn't know what was going on.
Maybe we needed that.
That was, wow. I mean, what was that? This is not very good radio.
No. I think this is great radio.
That was really, really something. I was about to say, yeah, this is saved. I may have to go back and revisit that. That was way up north.
I'm going to have my own copy of that. Because I'm back here in the studio. There's no way that Agnes can share in the beauty of Hooray for Santa Claus from Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. I'm okay. Deep breath, both of us, Sandra.
Yeah, no.
Okay, wow. It's not working, but we'll try.
Man.
I know you didn't. I know you didn't have Santa Claus Conquers the Martian on the brain when you called in.
No.
You're just having a hard time getting back to whatever it was, aren't you?
Yeah. No. It just all seems to sort of pale. You know. But that was good. Maybe it puts things in perspective. I really don't know. No, only reason why I called was I was just sort of reeling. Did you see that email I sent you?
Yeah, I did, and then I read the article.
I mean, I was just sort of like thinking, oh, no. You know, because it's really bordering beyond the absurd now.
Yeah, because President Obama now says that he never campaigned on the public option.
Well, no, the whole idea that he's trying to say the public option is an ideological touchstone is what's making me ill. It's like, I thought it was to control costs. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Oh, yeah. It's that St. Paul, all things to all people kind of thing again, I guess. There's the people that for whom, it's all about the cost. We've got to cut the cost. And.
Uh-oh. Anyway.
Well, I was going to say, is Santa Claus or a Martian at your door? I mean,
Bobby, let me call you back.
All right, sounds good, Sandra. All right, later. For all I know, the show may have gone sideways at this point. I've had a lot of things played on this program. That's wow. In the email box from our buddy, critic at large, Reverbo. Subject line, we miss Frank Zappa, too. Frank Zappa, born December 21st, 1940, making our recognition of his birth a nicely timed event. Composer, musician, conductor, producer, and above all, satirist and critic. Put him up there with Carlin, Thompson, Vonnegut, et al. He was one of us and was a thorn in their side from the beginning until his death from prostate cancer at the age of only 53. He got mad at all the right things.
Reverbo says. Among other acute observations, he said the following in front of the Congress of the United States regarding the misguided efforts of people like Tipper Gore, who wanted to protect us all from controversial ideas in popular music. Quote, "The establishment of a rating system, voluntary or otherwise, opens the door to an endless parade of moral quality control programs based on things certain Christians do not like." Reverbo notes, "We couldn't have said it better ourselves." And offers, and I'm sitting here looking at the cover, I hadn't seen it in forever, the 1968 cover of the Mothers album, "We're Only in It for the Money." What a mind-blowing, brilliant satire on the Sgt. Pepper's cover. And Reverbo notes, "Man, do we need Zappa now?" And yeah, and that's the thing I guess I'm getting at. We do, but the other thing that we need is to learn to. They always ask any basketball or football coach. He'll tell you, "Well, you know, I can teach cornerback. I can teach cover too, but I can't teach talent. You either got it or you ain't." But there's a ton of talented people out there who can and ought to, and in many instances are trying to step into the void that these great ones that we have lost left behind. The question, however, is how do we lift them up when they appear? Does that make sense? Does it? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Uncle Bob. It's Brian from the...
Oh, hey, Brian.
I didn't mean to shock anybody. I'm sorry, Sandra. I didn't mean to... I'm not on any...
Oh, no. It was just delightful. It just took everything completely sideways. Don't apologize, Brian.
No, I just want to say it's that the fact is... The truth is not something like. I hope that you don't have any little kids in there, right?
No.
In the studio, okay. That just okay. I was going to whisper, but if I can say, it's safe to say it, that it's the truth is kind of like it. The truth should not be a thing like a fictitious character like Santa Claus, like a legendary character like Santa Claus. The truth should be the search for that same goodness. In the same, like the song says, he's watching, he's working on toys for the kids, but you got to be good girls and boys, that kind of thing. It's the same as the Prince of Peace named Jesus, but it's the same of any civilization in humanity, regardless of religion or this or that. You know, it's a universal human thing. Either we evolve into that as an evolutionary species instead of a revolutionary species, which is bloody and deadly. That's what we're doing right now in Afghanistan. I've got a lot more that I want to go back on there sometime, but I'll wait till after the Christmas holiday there. But I've also, you probably have heard this about that there's a story at commondreams.org, Broken Promises Follow Tennessee Coal Ash Disaster.
Yes.
Yeah, about the 60-foot tall dam that broke a year ago.
Right, and that was, that's one of the two things that opened the program. And so many, so many failures have followed from it.
Yeah.
And we still haven't, and obviously if the EPA is now urging farmers to put that garbage on their crops, how seriously do we take it? How seriously do we take what happened in the Clinch and Emory and Tennessee rivers a year ago?
The fact is also, I took it for granted. I remember the story, but You made a satiric comment, I believe it was the earlier caller just before me with Matt, talking about, that you were making about some Republican politician or some corporatist politician, saying that, well, government never created a single job, that kind of nonsense. The fact is, this is part of this Kingston Power Plant in Roane County was part of it's been a part of, for decades, the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Right.
The Tennessee Valley Authority that was built in the 1930s, beginning in the 1930s, under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that conservative-leaning Democrat who was forced into doing his big works, public works projects. And in that area of the six states, I believe, is surrounding the Tennessee Valley Authority, those jobs that were created then, big government, made a huge impact on the living standards of the people there, the living wages of the workers there, doing that hard daily work there. that made huge advances for the economy of that area until just after World War II, and when the Republican businessmen took back over and basically privatized the area, quote unquote. But they continue these power plants. They make money off of the Tennessee Valley Authority, created with huge amounts of government investment and government paid workers being paid a living wage, not a corporate wage. Now, you know, they call American workers the most productive on the planet. It's because they're not paid nearly what they're worth to these multinational corporation bastards.
No, and they work in a constant state of fear.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
9/11 helps with that.
Sure it does. Sure it does. I mean, you know, it's a hell of a thing to go doing your Christmas shopping at the local Walmart, realizing that you could be part of a smoking pile of rubble because the radical Muslims hate our freedoms at just any minute. Doesn't matter what any Walmart, whatever. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. 9/11, your leadership. 9/11. Yeah.
It's such nonsense because this very president we have in there, and I have huge differences with him. But this is something I wanted to get into too, Bob. I felt kind of like I try to like hold back because it is the Christmas holiday, and you want to, you know, you don't want everything to be so heavy. And but the fact is, they're trying to, you know, he's an idealist in some ways, but he's a true progressive, and he's right now he's not taking on these corporations. In this case, the private healthcare industry, the misery industrial complex there. He's not taking them on, but he could still things still have to get much worse before he does, but he could still be pushed into it. And he is a Democrat in the end, after all. And I get tired of some cynical callers, not just your show, any show, that just want to dismiss the entire Democratic Party. The local activists here in New Hampshire, back in 2002, 2003, we had Jean Shaheen. She just had the senatorial race was stolen from her, basically, by John Sununu. Who,
sure.
Basically, but that we had nothing but Republicans, two Republican senators, and two in the two congressional districts, two Republicans there as well. But now we have three Democrats, progressive, strongly progressive Democrats in their place. Carol Shea Porter, my own first New Hampshire district. Second district is Paul Hodes. And the Senator Shaheen finally took back the Senate seat back in 2008. And that Judd Gregg is going to retire probably 2010. And that Paul Hodes may be running, or they're trying to get some other good progressive to take that seat over. And the fact is, we can't let those gains go. You know, you just can't sign away anybody who's got a D in front of their name because of what.
Well, no, and the thing there's a very, very profound distinction, and I think you're tapping it, Brian.
Yeah.
And that is, there is a difference between the people who have worn the soles off of their shoes putting folks into office.
Yeah.
And the people who go into office and don't do what the people wearing the soles off their shoes sent them there to do.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's, you know, that's the greatest betrayal. You know, I mean, this miserable freak in Northwest Alabama, Parker Griffith.
Uh-huh.
This guy campaigned as a Democrat. And I know lots of Democrats in Northwest Alabama.
Yep.
And they busted their asses for him, Brian.
Right.
And this guy comes out today and says, well, I've decided, you know, screw all of you. You may have voted for me thinking I was a Democrat, but, you know, surprise, I'm a Republican now.
God, it's just that's like that Ben Nighthorse Campbell, the former Democratic senator from Colorado.
Yeah, it's the same principle. Or Richard Shelby from Alabama.
Yeah.
Or, you know, for that matter, how many people for how many years put Joseph I. Lieberman
right
into office in Connecticut, you know, thinking that he had, you know, that he had some credibility that went beside that D beside his name?
And the one good thing—that's one good thing. December 12, 2000, when the Supreme Court, his daddy's Supreme Court, appointed him president. One good thing that came out of that—at least you can see what a friend he's been to the neocons. At least Joseph Lieberman was not our vice president for what would have been almost certainly 8 years under Al Gore's presidency. The Social Security's trust fund would have been protected, a lockbox, et cetera. But not to go into that. Sometimes history can work in our favor. But I just wanted to also add too that people out there that think the Republicans that they're always playing to their constituents, you know, the sole Bible belters, the born again and the anti-abortion. But they, throughout the 2000s, there's this decade called the 2000s, Bob, 2000 to 2009, basically. George W. Bush, he had such capital, especially after September 11th and going on to the Iraq War, et cetera. He had such capital that he could have sent in such a majority in the Senate and the House that he could have sent some kind of legislation in there. All you people that are against abortion, he could have sent some kind of legislation in there to overturn Roe v. Wade. And this war president, as he says, I can't do a good GW impersonation. He could have forced that through, but these Republicans, they didn't want to do that because they would, it's being like taking away the Al-Qaeda enemy. It's like being, finding out that Bin Laden may actually be dead, or they may not be as formidable as the war.
Exactly, and the next thing you know, the single-issue weirdos don't show up at the polls anymore, and then the Republican Party just dies.
And yet they're still buying it with this Palin girl there, overgrown girl. But the fact is, Republicans never, they had the, and that may have been the only time in history where they actually could have, again, overthrown Roe v. Wade. I believe we are evolving as a nation where a woman's right, you know, it just, Barbara Boxer made great points on the Senate floor there about a week ago about the, you know, women's rights and how that, yet at the same time, their personal and reproductive rights, they're not protected. The corporations are and the born again Christians and all that, they make inroads into all of that for women, but men with their Viagra, I believe they can get things like that.
Brian, I got one for you. I got one from a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Major General Anthony Sokolo.
Okay.
Okay. He's responsible for all the operations in northern Iraq.
Right.
All right. Well, he's come out with a new policy that went into effect this past November 4th.
Yeah. Oh, I think I know where you're going.
Any woman under his command who becomes pregnant on active duty goes to the brig.
No good bastard. No, that's you talk about a.
Now, on the other hand, on the other hand, you know, if some guy, some guy gets an Iraqi woman pregnant,
Yeah,
and there's certainly no inquiry if this active duty female becomes pregnant. There's no inquiry as to who the father is, and he does it. There's nothing express or explicit about him going to the brig.
And the rate of sexual attacks, just think how bad it is for Iraqi women or Afghan women, but the rate of sexual attacks against our own American women, they're serving bravely in the...
It's documented, Brian. It is absolutely documented.
It's in a high... skyrocketed. During the occupation, then that hellish, unneeded occupation of a country that had no threat, that had nothing to the United States, had nothing to do with September 11th. That's the truth of it. Saddam Hussein was a lion without teeth. He was, the regime was crumbling. If they really wanted, I've covered so much World War II history, but if they really wanted a free Iraq and a stable Iraq, Bob, you know it and I know it. We had the Free French Army, the Free Polish Army of World War II, the Free Poles. Eventually, they did get the freedom in Poland. Eventually, after the, you know, Stalin, they didn't help the Warsaw Uprising. There were a lot of questions about it, but the Poles, they were tens of thousands of them were trained in America and in England and the Free French.
You're absolutely right.
And that was the goal, to free their country truly, not to free up the oil wells and the oil reserves for the corporations. But I'll let you go from there, but I still want to be truth-based. I know my stupid, I just like sometimes these sci-fi movies
that was fun, and you'd be surprised. I've had hits on Facebook. I just got sent the movie poster for Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Okay, and I'm glad that, if you can assure me, I believe my Uncle Bob, that no little kids were listening right now.
You're rock solid.
Okay. Okay, hooray for Santa Claus, and you have a very happy holiday, sir, and a very peaceful New Year to all.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you very kindly. You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's do, as Brian was pointing out, let's do draw a clear distinction between Democrat in terms of the people who go and do the work and get the, you know, never for pay, always at their own cost. Let's draw a distinction between them, those Democrats, and the Democrats who receive all the largesse and then don't do the work they were sent to do. Let's make sure that we draw a clear distinction there, because, frankly, I admire activism. You know that. And the, you know, the greatest betrayal is of those people who do that hard work and then receive, you know, nobody, it's not even a matter of having your name called or printed on a list or, you know, oh, you gave $10,000 or rubber chicken dinners or any of that stuff. The only thing that most volunteers want is for their candidate to go to Washington, D.C. and do the damn job they were sent there to do. And oddly enough, that seems to be the greatest difficulty we have in getting them to do precisely that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Hey, Sandra.
Hey, oh, God, I just sort of had, you know, everything happen all at once.
Well, I know how that goes.
Oh, God, with the dog. The dog that's about as big as my hand, you know.
Well, yeah, I could tell from the sound in the background. So the pup sounds like a killer there.
Charging after, you know, someone that's like nearly 300 pounds. It's just like, please. Anyway, it was just more of a comedy scene. I guess that's how the show is going in a sort of sardonic.
Well, it really is. It really is.
But, yeah, no, anyway, I just was sort of, I mean, I can't believe that, you know, we're entering this realm where now it's just bald-faced lying. You know what I mean? With the public option and Obama trying to say it wasn't that, you know, crucial. And
yeah, well, yeah, you know, it would have been nice, but, you know, it's like saying that you got the blue Buick, but you didn't get the power windows.
Right, but he also said we wouldn't tax plans or do a mandate either, right?
I think you're right.
You know, come on, the whole thing is.
Well, going back, wasn't? Do you remember when Paul Krugman very scrupulously analyzed the two health care proposals between candidate Obama and candidate Clinton? And came down on candidate Clinton's side because he said, based on his analysis, that candidate Clinton's plan would have covered more people. I mean, I seem to recall that being back there somewhere, although it all runs together after a while.
Yeah, he said that because hers had mandates, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, but I mean, the mandate issue isn't mandates per se. I mean, we have mandates for Social Security and other public programs. My problem is being forced to buy something from a private corporation as just existing. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. And I'm reading. You know, I'm reading some, and there's a lot being put out there now that the vast majority of the coverage is going to come from expansions of Medicaid. But there is still going to be an element out there, if I read this correctly, and what we're talking about at this point is the Senate bill, of course, because, you know, we all acknowledge that this is by far, you know, this is far from over. But the Senate bill says that there's a portion of the uncovered who are going to be compelled to buy coverage from for-profit insurers.
Yeah, well, no, look at the stock market. To me, that's just, I mean, I don't even want to say it's hilarious, because it's really frightening.
Yes.
But it's a fact. All these insurance stocks are just going through the roof. Why? Because it's a damn subsidy, you know? It went from a public option to a subsidy. And it's just horrific.
And you know, we still don't know how it's going to operate. And that's one of the most frustrating things out of this. I mean, I've read the back and forth. Krugman said in the final analysis, pass the damn bill. Howard Dean said, you know, this is a poison pill bill. You know, don't pass it. Nothing is better than this. And I feel like I'm in the fun house.
Well, yeah, because the part of the fun house is the whole idea that it is not going to kick in for what, 3 years or something?
Right. Although, you know, there are some things that kick in something approaching immediately, but the vast majority of it, no.
Well, okay, well, what about the whole idea of no pre-existing? Is that going to kick in immediately? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, is any of the what would be considered a plus, is that going to kick in before this man's presidency is over with?
Well, I just happen to have a list.
Okay.
Let's see if we can make some sense out of this, Sandra. There's $5 billion in immediate federal support for a new program that will provide so-called affordable coverage to uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions. And it takes effect 90 days after enactment. And it will stay in effect until the new so-called exchanges are operational in 2014. In other words, it's, I guess, a stopgap?
Yeah, you mean before the more government-sanctioned predatory little enclaves become available?
Right, which is 2014.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see, the community health center stuff starts in 2010.
Are those the amendments that Sanders got in?
I don't know.
These clinics? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you're right. Community health center investment expands access to health care in communities where it's needed most, and $10 billion begins in 2010 and goes for 5 years.
Okay, so I'm just wondering, I just didn't understand what the Democratic leadership was getting out of this if it doesn't kick in for years. You see what I mean? Because everything is, what have you done for me right now?
Right.
You know what
and
I mean?
six months after enactment, health insurers are prohibited from using pre-existing condition exclusions for children. I mean, these parts are reasonable.
No, but this is my question. Yeah, that's all nice. But, you know, anybody can tell me, you can do this if something's wrong with you, but you got to pay. You won't be able to afford it still because we don't have to control costs. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I do
completely. And one of the things that I'm not at all certain about, for instance, is that, you know, on the one hand, they say that there's not going to be any the idea of lifetime limits on coverage is out the window 6 months after enactment of the bill. And it applies to all new plans. See, I'm real paranoid about words, Sandra.
Okay, so no, but that's saying that they're going to be able to, these are kind of death paths, some sort of ways of cutting people off, right? If they're sick and, you've spent too much and now just go die? Is that what that is?
Well, that keeps them from doing that. I mean, just by way of example, and I'm not trying to get too heavy or anything, being mindful of what Brian was talking about, but when my mom was dying, she spent 7 months dying in a medical intensive care unit in Birmingham, Alabama, and they only came to us in month seven when she had exhausted her Medicare benefits. The minute that her Medicare benefits were exhausted, the doctors came to us and said, well, you know, we got to stop playing God and just let her move on. And the irony was not lost on me, Sandra. You know, why weren't we having this conversation back, at the we've only billed $500,000 worth mark? Not that I was in any way in a hurry to hustle my mom off the planet, but it seemed a little bit too coincidental.
Well, no, and then don't bring God into it when there is, a number associated with it. Of course.
Right, don't bring God into it when there's an accountant standing in front of God.
No, of course there is a limit on these things. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, there's no reason. Yeah, I'm not too sure about that. I thought that there was some language in the bill that people were all up in arms about that indicated that it was some wiggle room for them to put ceilings.
Well, the wiggle room exists. Like I said, the language is what makes me paranoid, because with regard to choice of doctors, limits on lifetime coverage, limits on annual coverage, there's this phrase, and it says, this provision takes effect 6 months after enactment, and this is the kicker, and applies to all new plans. Operative word being new.
Yeah.
So, in other words, you ain't getting grandfathered. If I'm reading this correctly, Sandra, if you're part of a plan that has lifetime limits or annual limits, they're going to be there because it's not part of a new plan.
Okay, so all the people who have insurance now, tough titty on you if the corporations already had limits in place, but for people who are able to get on to new plans after this law is enacted, won't have those limitations? Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm reading, if I'm reading it correctly.
So it's just, you know,
there's a way of looking at that, Sandra, that may have, I mean, there may be a silver lining here. I don't know. But the silver lining may be that as the so-called exchanges come in, all the exchanges are subject to all of this legislation, and people transition away from their old insurance to the exchanges, and that is, as some people have argued, a step toward, in the right direction, toward public option, toward universal single-payer health care. And I realize I may be reading this in a totally Pollyanna fashion. But if that's kind of the intent behind it, it's not necessarily a bad idea. Because if you're in an old plan and you get into a new plan, then all of that stuff goes away with your entry into the new plan.
Well, no, but I understand what you're saying. But to me, the whole thing sort of smacks of this way of locking in for generations this sort of, private, there isn't going to be no way out for us. This is my.
Well, yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, and I think there's a very dangerous element to it in that having done this, and we're assuming for the moment that this is going to go through the conference process, it's going to go into the House and pass, that's a given, it'll go into the Senate, and I don't think it's a given at all that it'll pass in the Senate. Because if there is one hair's difference of anything coming out of the conference committee, that life support system for a dead chinchilla on his head, Ben Nelson can say, well, this isn't what I agreed to, and boom, it's dead.
He don't want anyone taxing the wealthy, but are they going to tax hair pieces? What's happening? You know? That guy is fugly. He really needs to step off. I can't even look at him, but that hair, lordy.
Oh, well, you know, who was the comedian that had the ventriloquist puppet, Madam?
Oh, okay, yeah, I don't know.
There is something vaguely reminiscent of Madam in Ben Nelson's face.
Yeah, I mean, he's foul. It's just something really disgusting.
But what I'm trying to get across here, Sandra, is again, there are no guarantees.
No, I understand, but
what scares me is, and just to extend my paranoia, what scares me is that if the planets all align and we all stand on one leg and point to the east and hold one arm up and my tongue just so, and this thing gets passed into law, the Congress will feel like it has fixed health care and won't come back to it for 100 years.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. And also, the nerve of these rapacious, these horror shows like Nelson bitching about the possibility of the rich being taxed. You know, I'm about sick of that. When the whole government is just skewed to help these people nonstop. And it's okay for him to make those statements. I'm like, when will it not be okay for them to say stuff like that? I just find it just outrageous in lieu of the largesse that these people get. His ass gets health care paid by us. You know, the nerve, you know? It's just, I mean, I realize it's just pointless even for me to get my high blood pressure going on it, but it just drives me crazy, these people.
Oh, I know. We're dealing with my manifest paranoia, and I apologize to anybody who's offended, but I have no faith in the Democrats' ability to get this done.
Oh no, I just find let me just send this to you. I found something else that's beyond the beyond, but It was just an article written at the Black Agenda Report about, you know, the inauguration and what black people are expecting. I mean, it's just worth a reread because you can just reflect on where we're at now because it's incredible. But back to the Obama thing, I mean, are you kidding me with him? He don't do triangulation well. It's just not, at least it's not playing with me. I have to say I found Bill Clinton sort of amusing with all that. It's like, dude, you're kind of funny, and it kind of worked on some levels. But with Obama, it's just, because shit is so deep. It's like he can't be serious, you know?
I know.
I just think, wow, are you kidding me?
It all seems like it has been handled, and again, I'm sure I'm pissing somebody off. It just seems like it's all been handled so ineptly.
No, clumsily
even.
Yeah, it just goes right back with him giving DVDs to them people in Britain. I mean, I realize these are small things, but it's like, dude, don't you got handlers?
Hmm.
And I understand, dude.
I want to do this myself.
It's just sort of, I don't know. He's had a lot of those kind of really sort of obvious political mistakes that just seem real ham-handed, and you know, you're surprised.
Could that actually be because he doesn't approach being a Democrat of some sort, doesn't approach the presidency the way that Republicans do? I mean, consider Ronald Reagan. You know, everything got delegated, and there was an entire army of people around him to make sure that nobody ever got close enough to realize that the guy was crazier than a sprayed roach.
Well, there could be that, but there also could be, you know, perish the thought. You going from being a state senator to a senator for 2 years and now president. I'm sorry.
You know? Well, does that sort of call up recollections of the man from Plains going from former Georgia governor to president of the United States?
Well, no, yeah, and it calls up the idea that with politics, experience does help. Let's be honest. I don't care. I'm not into this newbie shit because all the successful people have had years of roaming the hallways or whatever they need to do to get the experience. No matter what side of the aisle you're on, let's be honest. So, I'm falling back on that. I think, you know, maybe we're looking at someone who is kind of in over their head.
And figuring it out as he goes along.
And it's a really bad time for us to have that type of leadership. Because the talk is real cheap now.
Yeah, but Sandra, as compared to what? I mean...
Well, oh, no. I understand.
See, that's the thing. It's real easy to get real frustrated with Barack Obama because he's not going where we want him to be going. And he's doing a lot of stuff that we wish he wasn't, and he's not doing stuff that we wish he would. And we can sit here and just get our blood pressure all jacked up. And I know because I do.
No,
And then two words pop into your head. Actually, it's a little dialogue that runs in mine, Sandra. CBS News has just learned that President John McCain has passed away from nose cancer. President Sarah Palin is being sworn in as we speak. Let's cut to the live feed.
Oh, no, listen. Oh, no.
And all of a sudden, I'm all right with Barack Obama again. Now, I realize I'm probably getting played, but I'm all right with Barack Obama right after that runs through my little noggin.
No, I agree with you. No, I definitely agree with you on that. It's just sort of... You know, it's just, I'm not saying that it should be easier for him or it just seems a bit over the top because he cannot really think that we're going to sit there and buy that he didn't campaign on a public option, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly, because the tape is there.
Right.
Just like that video of him standing up in the state senate in Illinois saying the only real answer to America's health care mess is universal single payer. I mean, this is the 21st century. The cameras were rolling, and he really, really did say that.
And at the end of the day.
And he was correct.
And at the end of the day, he's the one that decided he was going to take it on. right?
Yep.
I didn't hear George Bush talk. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just sort of like...
But maybe that's part of the frustration, Sandra. He did choose to take it on. But the fact of the matter is, he didn't proactively take it on. He left it to be sort of mishmashed and muddled and wallered around inside the Congress while a bunch of us were sitting out here going, well, for Christ's sakes, Barack, tell them what you want.
Well, no, then this is the cynic in me coming out, too. You get back to the secret deal. You know, we get back to the whole idea of, what's his name from Minnesota? Fine. Oh, God. The senator.
Oh, Franken?
No, Feingold, is that his name?
Oh, Russ Feingold from Wisconsin?
Yeah, who said this was, I guess, the bill that Obama wanted. You see, that sticks in my mind, because if that's the case, then him not prodding the process along is exactly what he wants. And now that he's saying he wasn't campaigning on it, maybe he's trying to frame that reality. I mean, I don't know.
I don't either, and I think the other thing that plays into so much of this confusion is something that you have commented negatively on, and I have commented both ways on, and that is this idea that he is somewhere out ahead of us in terms of the moves in the game. The phrase I see lately is 11-dimensional chess.
Oh, no, see, that whole narrative is so pathetic, it's just almost not worth visiting anymore. I'm sorry, I just think, no, lose it.
Right, because so much of the time I've kind of looked, no. I got an idea about three-dimensional chess. This is checkers.
An article I sent you, you know what I mean? Because, unfortunately, black folks fall victim to that. They'll come up with all kinds of single-bullet theories until the end of the world for this guy, you know?
Yeah, well, and a significant number of white folks, too. Hey, Sandra, I got to run along, but this has been wonderful, and... I got a feeling you're going to go out and watch Santa Claus Conquers the Martians.
Oh, got to. Okay, take care.
All right, see you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. And 11 and a half minutes past the hour, and we will keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to you, John Wathen.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm doing, well, tolerably fair, as we say. How about you?
Oh, I can't complain to anybody that'll listen.
I know the feeling. But I'm awful glad that you took time to give a jingle because, we got knocked off the air last night by, that coal-fired power grid we live with up here in West Virginia. Can't quite seem to keep the lights on in a 2-foot snowstorm. But,
well, it's been a year, Bob.
It has been, and that was the whole point. And you have followed this as close or more closely than anybody else I know, the disaster in Kingston, Tennessee. Is there a general overview or a general sense that you have of where we stand in terms of Kingston and in terms of, you know, the overall miseries of coal ash in general? I mean, is there a blurb? Is there anything that's just got your hair on fire?
Well, yeah, there is, Bob. You know, there's been a lot of activity in Kingston here recently. You know, we had a congressional subcommittee hearing on the progress in Kingston. And while they are making some marginal progress in getting this stuff out of the river up there, the recipients of it here in Alabama have been, you know, basically overlooked by everybody.
Yeah, you mean Perry County.
I mean Perry County in a big way. We're just beginning to see the influx of this stuff. If they're able to get away with the things they're doing down here, then what I'm expecting to see is a move toward moving coal ash into household garbage land dumps across the country.
And because that's what they did in Perry County, isn't it?
Exactly right. See, there was a lot of misgiving about this landfill and that it was going to be kind of set up just for the ash, and that's not the case. They're using the ash as top cover for household garbage. So as you can imagine, the ash is being dredged up off the bottom of the Emory River, and yes, it does go through some degree of drying, but there's no way to get all the water out of it. They bring that down here and spread it out and mix it with household garbage, and I'm talking about everything you throw away in your house, from pesticides to cleaning agents to pharmaceuticals to God knows what goes down, you know, through the landfills. And then it rains. This produces a huge amount of leachate, which, you know, this landfill has never dealt with in these volumes before.
Right.
Off-site. This is, you know, we're seeing now, I've done the math on it, and the ash that left Kingston, Tennessee a year ago has come in contact with 8 river systems in Tennessee and Alabama.
That's the Emory, the Clinch, the Tennessee.
Which empties into the Mississippi. Then over here in Alabama, they put it in Perry County, where the landfill discharges into the Chalachi Creek, which goes to the Alabama River. But it's created such a huge amount of leachate that the leachate had to be trucked to Marion and put in a wastewater lagoon and mixed with the sewage there. This is household garbage mixed with coal ash, now mixed with sewage, and dumped into the Cahaba River. And we caught them there, the arsenic at the point of discharge, after treatment, the arsenic was 0.067 milligrams per liter. And the EPA safe threshold for arsenic is 0.0005.
My God.
My God's right. Well, we busted them there, and I've got a video up on YouTube. I sent you a press release a while ago that has some video links in it. There's one up there called Marion Wastewater Lagoon that was dedicated solely to this and the health problems that it caused in that community. My good friend and attorney David Lutter, who is an absolute hero. I mean, he really is the strongest working force on this that we have in Alabama right now. David filed multiple 60-day notices of intent to sue. And we got the leachate stopped going into Marion. So then they had to truck it somewhere else, and the only place that would take it was Demopolis. So they're running it through the wastewater treatment center at Demopolis, which discharges into the Tombigbee River, which discharges into the Mobile River. That's 8 river systems.
And so then that's 2 separate river systems dumping into the Gulf of Mexico.
Yes, absolutely. It's grown like the cancer that it carries, Bob.
Well, and that was going to be my next question, John.
It's spreading like a cancer throughout the Southeast.
What
and how TVA can claim any degree of success is beyond me.
Well, what are the toxicology or what are the anticipated toxicology ramifications of this? I mean, Perry County is a very poor community. They don't put landfills next to McMansions. What can we expect in 10, 15, 20 years? For the people who are living downstream of this garbage, this toxic waste, this poison, this.
Well, now get this. Where the landfill is situated, I got an arsenic hit in the roadside ditch beside the landfill. The arsenic level there was 0.007, which was just above the safe level, but it's still... It was an arsenic hit. It hadn't been rained, and this was just water accumulated in the ditch. There was a white powder all along the ditch there. Well, I talked to a gentleman who lives right on the road, and he was telling me that his daughter's horse had gotten stuck in that ditch. They got the horse out, no injuries, no abrasions, no cuts, anything like that. 3 days later, the horse dropped dead.
Oh, Jesus.
The lady that owns the house directly across from where I got that sample told me, and I didn't understand this at first. This is in a video that I've created on YouTube called Arrowhead Landfill Concerned Citizens. She said they're letting the odor out at night, and that didn't make sense to me.
No, not really.
She said when they pump the water out at night, the odor seems to get worse. So I went down there on December 15th after a little bit of rain, and the odor was horrible. We were getting ammonia levels in the hundreds out of this, which inside a sewer pipe, you shouldn't expect to see ammonia levels going above 20 to 28. And we were getting it in the hundreds coming out of this stuff. So I got to looking, and what they were doing is they're pumping the water directly, the leachate, directly out from under the ash up onto the roadbed and letting it run down the side of the road into the roadside ditches and down beside these people's houses.
Can I ask if the houses in this area, are they on a public water supply or are they on wells?
Oh, they're on well water.
Oh, son of a...
Well, now, one thing I will say this. This is in the Selma Chalk Basin, and the drinking water aquifer is below the Selma Chalk. And this is almost like an impervious layer of chalk, which has created its own problem because none of this water is percolating at all. Any water that goes into that landfill has to be pumped out. None of the wastewater treatment facilities. We sent notice to every waste treatment facility within 100 miles of the place. We sent them the arsenic results. Nobody will take this stuff now except Demopolis, and they're really they're reconsidering it. They're thinking maybe they should not take it anymore.
But are the transports still? But are
the water could actually be the Achilles heel of this thing.
Because of the fact that it won't percolate and it won't go away and it won't disappear like they'd like for it to.
Exactly. And now that I've got plenty of photographic evidence up on Photo Bucket for people to look at. I actually caught the pump in the stuff, pumping it out on the road. We took samples of it. I hadn't gotten the sample results back yet, but I'm expecting some extreme numbers.
I forget the exact name of the environmental organization in Alabama, the state government organization.
The Alabama Department of Environmental Maniacs.
Okay, yeah, that would be them. They're useless as tits on a boar, I assume.
Bobby Kennedy says that Alabama Department of Environmental Management is the paradigm for the captivated agency syndrome. They are the perfect model of the agency guarding industry from the citizens.
And whoever is appointed to head the thing, and I know you're either getting or you've gotten a brand new one. That's always somebody that comes out of the pollution industry.
We had Trey Glenn was the director for several years here, for the last 4 years, and performance at ADEM has gone steadily downhill under his control, and it was abysmal before he started. But this has just absolutely been...
Well, what are you hearing out of Washington? Do they have any input on this? I mean, this just seems like it was sort of unilaterally done by the TVA and Perry County and so forth, and, you know, the devil take the hindmost.
Well, they interviewed a few people from Perry County, but they chose the people who were making the money. You know, the people that were going to make money off of it, the county commissioner, the head of the county commissioner, Albert Turner, he's like, give me more. All you can send, we'll take it. I sleep great at night with Tennessee coal ash in the ground in Perry County and cash in my bank account. He said that in a newspaper.
I thought for a minute there you were sort of elaborating and exaggerating, but no. He bought
it in the newspaper. They're getting a dollar and a nickel a ton for every ton of this crap that's sent in here. And in the meantime, the people that live around it that are suffering the consequences of it, they're not getting squat.
Well, but does this guy not understand, John, that it's going to cost him a hell of a lot more than a dollar and a nickel a ton for the mess that it's making?
Well, it could. See, here's the little thing that nobody has considered, and this is something that I think has a lot to do with why EPA has delayed their decision to reclassify coal ash. If they reclassify coal ash as a hazmat before they're finished cleaning up Kingston, then automatically Perry County becomes a Superfund site.
Well, doesn't most of East Tennessee?
Well, yeah. But what they've done down here would have to be cleaned up because it should never have been, you know, you see the ramifications.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I am following you now.
We're going to have to go back and clean this mess out of here and take it to EML or re-permit this landfill as a hazmat landfill. And it's not designed for that.
Is there? I mean, are you aware of any method, John, by which that landfill could be retrofitted?
Possibly, and I think that's what they may be up to now. They're changing the design plan of it now. We think that the leachate collection system failed on it some time ago, and they're not able to collect the leachate like they were originally intending. But I've got photographs that I took from a Southwings airplane. God bless the folks at Southwings.
Oh, yeah.
Out those airplanes, we can't get up over this stuff. But I've got a picture I took in July where the pump was sitting in the exact same place where it is now. So this has been going on since July.
How much damage can be done in that span of time, given what we're talking about?
Well, it's... I'm not a scientist, Bob. I can't say because we don't know the volume yet. We don't. I've got some samples that are coming back of the sludge itself. But now here's something else to think about. Where they're unloading the cars is right on top of a storm drain culvert that runs into Talo Creek. Talo Creek runs into the Bogshito Creek, which is, endangered habitat. The other side of the landfill that they're pumping into the neighborhood over there and down between these houses or these trailers, that goes to the Chalachi Creek, and at the mouth of the Chalachi Creek is a public park with a boat landing, swimming area, the whole nine yards, and here comes all this arsenic.
Swimming area?
We don't know the ramifications of this. We don't know what the potential of this is yet. But I've written a letter to Lisa Jackson at EPA and asked her to intervene, that we need somebody besides my little old budget down here to take these samples. It's costing us a fortune, and we can't afford it. The government should be doing this. They created it. By God, they should be fixing it.
Well, that's the absolute truth. But at the same time, the trains are still rolling, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, and that's the thing. See, after this subcommittee hearing that just went down, Tom Kilgore and all of them, you know, they mealy-mouthed about what a great job they're doing, and Albert Turner said, give me more. The only representative from the citizens that was represented was inserted by Artur Davis. And poor Michael did the best he could, but he was not prepared. He had not been on the case. He didn't know what was going on. The people that lived in the area should have represented their own issue. Not
well, absolutely. But let me. I mean,
I'm Alabama, who had only been to the site once for a few minutes.
But the fact of the matter is, you know, where you've obviously climbed a pretty steep learning curve down there, John. What does it take to, I mean, Is there any way the community could, and I'm not, because I know you're busy, but is there any way the community could ask you to at least speak on their behalf? Because you know, I mean, you've seen it, you've measured it, you know the numbers.
We're working on that. The next time that there's any kind of hearing on this, I'm going to try to get in through Earth Justice or one of the other bigger environmental groups that has been following my work. We were not prepared for that. And because of it, the people were not well represented. These stories about the lagoon, these stories about the crap being pumped out on the roadside, they were not told. The people were not represented. The money was represented, but the people were not represented.
The money always is. I'm
sick and tired of that. You know, I see this stuff. We're talking about garbage leachate, but were it not for the ash, the landfill wouldn't be expanding too fast to handle its leachate. It's all a symptom of one thing, and that is coal. If you burn it, you got to put it somewhere. If you clean the air, you got to put the toxins somewhere. How in the hell are we going to continue to store this stuff if we continue to create it in mass like we do today?
Well, you know what? You had just echoed something that I've been thinking on a little bit myself, John, and that is if we can't handle something like, and obviously we can't handle coal ash from the scrubbers. We have no viable solution for it, including, you know, dams or whatever the ash piles, whatever we're calling them. That's not a solution. So if we think that if that's the best we can do with this stuff, how does anybody in their right mind think that anything else can ever be sequestered or captured or stored? There's only one real answer to this, isn't there, John? We got to stop burning this garbage.
Renewable energy. That's the only thing that's going to bring us out of this is using the energy that's available to us today. Waterkeeper Alliance, we've got the Dirty Lie website up now. I don't know if you've been to it.
Oh yeah, we talked about it on the air, as a matter of fact.
We've been adding to it, especially through the anniversary right now. We're putting a lot of stuff up there about coal ash. The different free medias that have the opportunity to break down the lie, the more people like yourself who expose the truth about the true cost of coal in all its aspects, then the more we can devalue the product. And once we do that, then green renewable energies become more viable. They become more sexy and attractive.
To the money.
That's the only thing that's going to change anything is the flow of money.
Well, John, let me back
you. Money is the only thing that has ever driven it to begin with.
Right, sure. The inexorable drive for, you know, holy profit. Let me back you up for just a minute and ask you, what's it look like where, or what's it looking like where this all began now? Up around Kingston. Are they getting back to anything that could be referred to as in the same neighborhood as normal?
Oh, no. I got some emails from folks up there the other day that said, you know, their once beautiful swimming area is now nothing more than an ash cell. They're not going to try to reclaim or dredge the entire content of that stuff out of the Emory River. They're only dredging the barge channel. The rest of it they're leaving in there. They're building dikes and walls that very closely resemble permanent ash containment. Chances are that stretch of the Emory River will never, ever be the same. They can't get it all out. They started wrong.
What about people's water supplies?
Aerial photographs of the dredging process when they began it. That one little dredge boat created such a huge swirl of ash that you can see it going downstream, going through the power plant and coming out into the Clinch River. they're continuously stirring this stuff and making a, well, the deposition of the material is miles now, well below the Watch Bar Dam.
Holy mackerel. Well, are they paying off, John, are they paying off the folks?
Our lake system there is contaminated.
What about the folks who had homes there? Have they been compensated, or are they dragging their heels? Or?
No, they're dragging their butts is what they do, and some have been compensated. The ones that were immediately destroyed right on the water got some compensation, but the entire community's collapsed. And people are one by one pulling away, and these really nice, nice houses are sitting there empty because who wants to live next to that? Who wants to come in vacation with 25 track hose going off in your front yard, beep, 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 backing up, trucks slamming, trains coming and going? This is a disaster area. The whole community is now failing.
Is the community itself fired up? I mean, has it? Because TVA came out and spewed a ton of disinformation right after it happened. Has the community sort of wised up and come together?
Oh, absolutely. United Mountain Defense have been really heroic. They've been up there taking samples and putting out monitors and giving people up to date information. The community is kind of taking things a little differently than they did in the early stages. Everybody wanted to trust TVA in the beginning. Nobody trusts TVA now.
And what about TVA's other ash installations, like Widow's Creek and places like that?
Well, now, Widow Creek, man, that was in a really rural area. There weren't but a couple of houses close by. But TVA has bought everybody out around there except one who's pretty much refused to sell out. But they're making life miserable for him. And Widow Creek, I put in, I've forgotten exactly how many pages of comments. It was over 20 pages of comments on the little $25,000 fine they got for that.
Yeah.
And in places in there, I wrote up that it looked to me as if the reports had been slanted to favor TVA and their performance. And ADEM, Alabama Department of Environmental Management, actually had the Cajingas to reply to me in writing. ADEM will neither confirm nor deny this comment.
Well, that's a non-denial denial.
I'm basically calling them liars there, and we're not going to say we are or we're not. Call me a liar, and I'm going to slap you down.
Well, that's true. Well, TVA.
I'm lying to you.
Well, TVA's got these kind of installations all over the region there. I mean, I think about the Colbert Steam Plant there, not too awful far from the Tennessee River, in Colbert County. Is ADEM satisfied that I was going to say, are they satisfied that the other ash dams are stable?
No, as a matter of fact, that one you just mentioned is considered one of the more dangerous by the EPA.
Sweet Jesus!
They're doing the same thing. It's wet stacking.
Yeah, and it
got it at Barry Steam Plant. We got it at Greene County Steam Plant. We've got it at Colbert County. We've got it at Widow Creek. I mean, these are ticking time bombs.
Well, are the ash dams managed any better, say, at Alabama Power installations?
Some, yes. It depends on the terrain. Really, it depends on the terrain. You know, when you get up into Jefferson County, Walker County, you've got strip pits and things that are close enough by that they're actually using them for holding cells. And they tend to hold better. They tend to work better than this wet stacking where you're putting ash on top of the ground and expecting the ash to hold itself in.
Well, you know, John, I've got a vested interest in the Shoals area there. Do people up there understand what it is that they're sitting on top of?
No. No, they don't.
Just out of sight, out of mind.
That's pretty much it.
Because for them, TVA is Wilson Dam and Wheeler Dam and Pickwick Lake and Wilson Lake, and there's some mighty fine catfish in there, but they don't think about downstream at the Colbert Steam Plant.
That's right.
How do you, well, let me just, I guess this is the $64 question. How do you turn the light on for folks like that?
Well, they've forgotten about Kingston already.
Well, that's my fear.
You know, maybe, hell, I don't know. For years, you know, we never heard about coal ash at all.
No.
Except for the Integrity Project and Earth Justice and some of the ones that had worked on coal ash as a project since the early days of the Citizens Coal Council, nobody really knew about coal ash until Kingston. And now, you know, maybe the complacency is, apathy is taking over. Who'd say, Bob, it may take another disaster to really wake people up.
And the thing is, I don't know if it will. I mean, you've got a community that's finally gelled in East Tennessee, but you got people downstream from them who barely even know that it happened.
That's right. And right here in Alabama, we've got people that are within 20 miles of that landfill that have no idea what it is and how toxic it can be.
And they're going to get up some morning and somebody's going to have leukemia. Or somebody's going to have bone cancer.
Well, we've already got reports of a lady that lives right there by the landfill with her hair falling out. Now, I can't say that that's definitely arsenic poisoning or if it's just stress or what it is. But something's going on in that community, and nobody's paying attention, damn it. You know, in Kingston, every vehicle that goes in or comes out of the disaster area must be washed down. Your shoes must be washed off. It's that sensitive. Here in Perry County, those trucks are driving in and out of that crap day in, day out. They're not washing them off. They're coming out onto the roads. They're tracking it all up and down in front of these people's houses. When it's not raining, it's a cloud of dust. When it is raining, it's gray water running down the ditches. Why are the people in this environmental justice community in Perry County any less important than the people in Kingston, Tennessee?
That's a question that occupies a lot of our time here, John.
Is it because they're not a voter base? Is it because they have no legislative power? Or is it because they think they're just too stupid to figure it out?
I mean, is there any organizing going on there?
There is now. There always has been a concerned citizens for Perry County, but they were kind of limited in their power. To be honest with you, nobody's been paying attention until we went down there and my lawyers saw this and decided to take some cases. And now there seems to be an upsurge because we've reached into the community and shown them a lifeline. We've shown them that there's some hope, and they're rallying around us, you know, like what do we do next? Yes, there's some organizing going on, and there's going to be some things coming out of Perry County that are going to make news very soon. I can't talk about them now, but...
No, I understand.
The feces is in the ventilato.
That I get. Well, John, I tell you what, I'm really glad you found time to call in and update us because.
Bob, listen, man, I appreciate all you do, and you know, I'm kind of looking forward to having you come on board as the water keeper. There's nothing like it.
Well, I think we finally going to get that ball rolling. It's taken a lot of doing, but I think that's going to happen now.
Well, if it wasn't for the support that I've gotten through the years from Waterkeeper Alliance and Citizens Coal Council, you know, nobody would be in Perry County representing those folks right now. That's not my watershed. Those aren't my immediate neighbors. I didn't know them until all this started. But because of the work we're doing on the DirtyLie.com and my board chair on the Citizens Coal Council, we've been able to reach into that community and represent them. And it's, you know, it's people like you that give voice to this movement. We love you for it, bro.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. I hope somewhere along the way soon I get to see you. We need to sit down and just jaw for a little bit.
Yeah, but, we do. Well, listen.
You're a tough man to nail down, though, John Wathen. You are.
You need to come jump in the canoe with me.
That sounds beautiful. I tell you what, we talk about the shoals. I mention the shoals because it means so damn much to me. I love that place.
Yeah,
it's home. And the idea that there's not somebody down there screaming from the rooftops just drives me absolutely crazy.
Well, you know, the water keepers are spreading. The coal ash is spreading like cancer, and the water keepers are spreading like good cheer. We've got 5 programs in Alabama now, and we're building quite a voice for ourselves here.
Well, I hope you just keep building and keep building and keep building. If there's any way at the great distance where I am that I can be of any assistance down that way, well, you know where my heart lies.
I hear you, man.
John, have yourself a great holiday season and give our best to everybody who needs the best given to them, will you?
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate taking the time to remember this is the anniversary of the largest man-made disaster in American history, and it's still going on today. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, John. Peace. John Wathen, Hurricane Creek Keeper. I don't know anybody who has done more to try to keep what happened in Kingston and what's happening downstream in the public consciousness than John Wathen. But, you know, there is a role you can play. If you choose to, you can ask your elected representatives why this is being allowed to continue, not just up there in the immediate area of the disaster of a year ago, but why that disaster is literally being railroaded into environmental justice communities that don't deserve it and are only getting it because they are absent a voice with which to oppose it. John's hypothesis for why the EPA is now waiting to declare coal ash a hazardous material makes as much sense or more than anything that I have heard in regard to that issue. And let me just give you an idea of the inequities involved by drawing a comparison. Many of you over the course of the weekend sent me a news story. Fear of violence escalates in West Virginia coal fields. That was the story. It was an AP story by Vicki Smith. It showed up in the Seattle Times. It showed up on Yahoo's front page. It made it to MSNBC's front page. Now I am told and shown, because the link has been sent to me, it has made it to the China Post in Taiwan. And part of this story has to do with the assault, actually the battery, if you want to be technically accurate about it, the battery that took place, committed by Ruth Tucker against Goldman Environmental Prize winner Judy Bonds. It was back in June at the Marsh Fork rally. We were there. And Ruth Tucker went out of her way to go over and hit upside the head, Judy Bonds, and had she not been pulled off, I think she intended to hit more people. That's my impression. she went to trial today in the magistrate court of Raleigh County, West Virginia. They tried to plea bargain the charge away. Didn't go. They tried to let her, her lawyer wanted her to plead no contest. Nope. So they had a little bench trial there in front of the magistrate in Raleigh County. And the evidence was uncontrovertible. The woman was guilty. Guilty as sin. And the magistrate found her guilty. And as punishment for committing this battery against another human being, this deliberate act of overt violence, she was fined $100 in court costs. No jail time. Nothing. Now, on the other hand, if somebody protesting the danger, the immediate danger to people all up and down that narrow little valley, trespasses on mine company property, they get fined $2,000. Some get sent to jail for days, weeks, a month. A journalist that you've heard on this program, a photojournalist by the name of Paul Corbett Brown, who was neutrally documenting an event, had all of his camera equipment, literally between $10,000 and $20,000 worth of camera equipment, confiscated by the sheriff of Boone County, West Virginia, and those cameras were then turned over to Massey Energy operatives who went through and examined all the photographs and then destroyed the equipment. There have been no consequences whatsoever for those who did that. By the same token, that's what we're dealing with in what John was discussing. The people who do humongous harm, horrible harm, mind-bending harm, to people who did not seek it at all, get away with it. On the other hand, however, if you try to get some justice, you are met at every turn with attempts to stymie it. And that's the reality. Sure enough, that is the reality. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hey.
Hey, you're on the air.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
You hear me?
I hear you fine.
This is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, what's up?
Well, I got a bad phone, probably. My phone, my phone is out of whack.
Oh, okay. Well, this one's sounding a little rough, but how you doing?
Okay. Do you mean that they just charged her $100 and that was it?
That's it. She went across and hit another human being in the head deliberately and intentionally, and she was fined $100 for it and not a minute in jail.
No, nothing else?
Court costs. Court costs. You know, maybe $135 court costs.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Well, I'm, once again, I don't know, Bob. The other caller, too, I know. It's all a tragedy and travesty at the same time.
I know.
Anyway, I won't stay on too long. I sent you a thing I'd like you to listen to. Maybe you'd want to play it with that verse. He wrote a poem about the night before Christmas.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. I read about that earlier today. That's a beautiful thing. From Roland Burris.
Yeah. I can't help but like him. I don't think he's any more crooked than most of the rest of them.
nor I. I think he was used as a whipping boy, and the right wing, the for-profit media, was more than happy to play along.
Yeah.
You know,
I saw last night, I was watching, and I saw the doctor from Oklahoma.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where he was.
Tom Coburn, yeah.
People need to pray for. I'm sure you heard that.
Yeah, and then, well, the funniest part of that one is that after he asked America to pray that somebody miss a health care vote, and what he meant by that was Robert Byrd.
Of course.
It turns out that his own...
They called out on it, but he didn't show up to answer it.
Right.
He had left after he said it. I was watching exactly when he said it.
Well, the funny part of it is, though, is that his own colleague from the Senate in Oklahoma then skipped the roll call vote today. Inhofe?
Yeah.
Hypocrite, thy name is Republican, right?
Yeah, somebody called in. I think they were pulling the leg of it. The Republican senator. They said, I pray, I'm teabagging, I pray that Senator Byrd wouldn't show up. And he did. He said, what went wrong? So did it turn out to be Inhofe? But anyway.
You know, I would hope, there's something out of this, though, Juanita, and I just want to say this, that I would hope that for all the regard that Senator Byrd has for the traditions of the Senate, I would hope that coming out of this fracas, that he understands that those traditions have been taken out behind the barn and killed by the conservatives and by the members of the Republican Party. They don't have any more interest in the majesty of the Senate than a hog does in a Sunday suit.
Yeah.
And I think the sooner... You know, it's tough to say with a man who's 91 or 92 years old, the sooner he realizes something, the better, because he's 91 or 92. But that's true. The sooner he realizes that the majesty of the Senate that he has dedicated his life to has been gutted by the other side, then maybe he'll understand why some real actions need to be taken.
Yeah. Well, I noticed when he was being rolled down there, I watched the count, and he was saying, shame, 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 when he was being rolled down to vote.
Yes.
But there's something else those people are. I mean, I thought, you know, the time I have a better connection, but I did learn quite a bit from actually my senator, Nelson, last night. You know, he was once the insurance commissioner down here.
Right.
And he said, I learned a lot about insurance. But anyway, and then Landro, believe it or not, I'm going to learn more about what they say is in the bill. I don't know. But the main thing that I don't like is that everybody's got to get it. How are they going to enforce that? And they claim that the people that can't afford it, that they'll be subsidized. Well, what if the Republicans get in? There ain't going to be no subsidy.
Well, and see, that's
Republicans.
Juanita, I think you've identified the fundamental flaw in this whole process, and that is that it is all subject because, look, they've already vowed, Juanita, that if they get power in 2010, they're going to undo all of this.
Oh, that, definitely they will.
And you know what? There won't be any shilly-shallying in the United States Senate about whether or not somebody's got 60 votes. They'll pass it with 51 and make us like it.
Oh, yeah. And also, one of their things about jobs is lower the wage.
Yeah, because, you know, we're making too much money out here.
Lower the wage.
How can anybody hear that and think that Republicans are for family values?
Yeah, you hear somebody changing over to be a Republican. He must think that they're going to get in power, and he wants to ride along with it. That's the way a lot of them did down here back in the 70s, I guess it was.
Yeah, but he's a freshman. That's a mighty big dice roll, Juanita. Him being a freshman member of the House, if he winds up in the minority after November 2010, he's going to be absolutely useless to the 5th District of Alabama.
Oh, of course.
You know, Bud Kramer was a very, very conservative Democrat in the worst use of the word. But he had some tenure, and he got a good bit of change brought back to that 5th district. You won't be able to say the same thing about Parker Griffin. Maybe he just wants out and finds this a better way than just quitting. I don't know. But we're up against it. We've run out of time. I hope you get your phone sorted out, Juanita.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. We think it's outside now because he's going on a couple of days, and I'm having to notify him by email, you know, and they're saying, oh, we'll have to charge a bunch of money if we go inside. Well, that's not necessary. We've already checked outside, and it just doesn't work. This is a computer phone, so that's probably...
Oh, okay. That, yeah, it's got to do with your bandwidth. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, you did, and I'm glad y'all are doing all right. I was concerned, really concerned about you.
It's been a little nerve-wracking. I won't kid you, but we've been better off than most.
I heard your little broadcast yesterday.
Yeah, all 3 minutes of it? Mercy, I know. Juanita, take care, dear.
Okay, you too.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. I hope Juanita gets her phone problem solved. I know that's got to just absolutely be frustrating beyond frustrating for her. Well, we're out of time. I'm actually over time, but that's how it goes around here sometimes. I want to thank John Wathen for taking time to call in and just sort of memorialize via update what's been going on for the last year. And, yeah, Mildred, you're right. $100 fine and costs for assault and battery on Judy Bonds. Yeah, you're right. I, of all people, should know. Forget about it, Bob. It's West Virginia. Ain't that the truth? Now, at least I ain't got the broken nose that Jack Nicholson had when he said it. So thanks, of course, go out to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, and to Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org, since 2002, the absolute repository for liberal talk on the Internet. Thanks to the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. See what I mean about being the bravest, hardest-working people I know? Yeah. Exactly. We'll be back tomorrow night. Cross your fingers. We'll have a lot of fun Christmas Eve, I think. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Pointing at people during the run-up to the election, and that they shouldn't.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! if I'm just a little bit paranoid. Is this going to stay on? Anything going to beep? Anything going to blink? Is the power going to go out? Come on, if you're going to do it now. I don't want this happening. I don't want this happening halfway through the program or 20 minutes in or something like that. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, look. Fact of the matter is, with the way things have been, we'll probably make it through these 3 hours, but we will do so with me waiting for the other shoe to drop. Makes me a little bit crazy when I get a show going and then, you know, sorry, Bob, no. That was frustrating last night. That was extremely frustrating last night. We've had some frustrating evenings lately. Between computers getting screwed up and, look, I should not gripe. I really, really should not gripe. At some point earlier today, I read that there are 100,000 of my fellow West Virginians for whom coal is still not keeping the lights on. Yeah, really. There are people in this state who are still in shelters, who can't heat their homes, who can't cook, don't have access to water because, you know, that maybe they've got a well and the well is on, the well has a pump in it and the pump's got, it depends on electricity and, you get the idea. But we've got electricity for now. Cross your fingers. Knock wood. See, I'm wrapping myself in the noggin right now as we speak. We'll get to it. We'll get through it. And I really do want us to get through it tonight for a couple of reasons. We simply must, if no one else does, mark the anniversary of the Kingston Ash Dam disaster in eastern Tennessee a year ago. And another little something else that came to my attention, and that is this. It is now officially 13 years that we have been without Carl Sagan. And in the course of not being able to do a show or anything like that, I had some old discs and just watched Cosmos last night in the absence, you know, on the laptop with what was, you know, with the battery that was there. Yeah, I got an hour or so. I got an episode in or whatever. And it was, it just reminded me of how much there are people out there that we need, that we would be so much better off for having in this fight right now. Carl Sagan was born in 1934. He would have been 75 years old as of November 9th of this year had he survived. And we sure could use him in the fight against the booger eaters where global warming is concerned. Because he so gently and you know, not in your face, not confrontationally, took fundamentalism apart. Piece by piece by piece in that Cosmos series. And it would be awfully nice if we had him around now as we try to make, as we try to drag, about 40% of America kicking and screaming into the 13th century. That's kind of where they are. I have a tremendous amount of respect for people like Carl Sagan. You know, one of the things that Carl Sagan was most concerned about was the possibility of the United States and the USSR basically incinerating the planet through some form of nuclear weapons proliferation-inspired madness, or induced, not inspired, but induced madness. Now that that threat is somewhat reduced, do we have any doubt that Carl Sagan would be active, would have very important things to say about what we are doing to this, what this, and he coined the term, this pale blue dot upon which we live? Is there any doubt? Not for me. Not for me. I miss Hunter Thompson. I miss Kurt Vonnegut. And I miss Carl Sagan. And, you know, a lot of people had a lot of fun with Dr. Sagan because of his distinctive speaking style. Billions and billions. Although in Cosmos, he never actually said that. A lot of people had a lot of fun with him, but then there were people who were just horses' rear ends toward him. And those people earn a special place in, you know, what? Yeah, I don't know, a spit in hell or something. Back in 1994,